Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome to Weekend Confirmed. My name is Garnet Lee. Have an awesome beginning of July show for you today. Starting off with an awesome cast of characters.
Indeed.
Who are looking at me with like, very like, they're like, well, really, what's going to be so awesome? I think it's going to be awesome because you have Prince on a Segway, Mr. Jeff Cannata.
I do. Not physically. It's just on my shirt. It's
a beautiful t-shirt of Prince. Riding a very custom Prince Segway.
Game sweet. Blouses.
Game blouses.
Game blouses.
First thing that came to my head when I saw that.
Nice. That would be Mr. Zav D'Amatos at the other end of the table.
What is up, fellas and lady? How are you?
Thank you.
Joining us would be newly dubbed Plan A. That would be Andrea Renee.
Yay. I like being Plan A.
Hopefully Plan B won't be too upset about that.
You're adamant to start a rivalry.
I want to. It'd be an awesome rivalry. They could like arm wrestle or something.
Do we know that's going to be simple.
I'd prefer
Andrew
leg wrestling.
Oh.
Okay.
Do we know any people with C first names? Just worried about
it. We need like a Calvin or a...
Sorry, Charles out there.
Charles, Charlie, Chuck. Kathy with a C.
I'm sorry, Kathy with a K. You are not welcome here.
Well, at least not doing it way down the list. We got a little bit of the alphabet to go before we get there. But the rest of the show today, we have a bunch of role-playing games hinging around Dungeon Siege 3, which several of us have been playing. I also started playing some Final Fantasy, which a lot of you were trolling me about on Twitter. We've also been playing some Witcher 2, some Tiny Tower on the iPhone. Uncharted 3 beta has been big across everybody. And Andrea had picked up Transformers Dark of the Moon, which was done by the same folks at High Moon that did the last Transformer game that was very well received. This one hasn't been getting quite as good a response.
But I really, really am having fun with it.
It's like the movie. It's really excellent.
It's actually a prequel to the movie.
It's the best movie of the summer.
You say that with sarcasm just loaded into your voice.
He's trying to provoke me, Andrea.
No.
He's trying to poke me with a stick.
I'm not provoking you at all.
Watch the monkey dance. Make him angry.
It's
actually, I didn't
tell
you this, but we're going to make the monkey dance during news because I want you to read something.
Is that a euphemism?
Always. That's what I call my move, actually.
Monkey dance.
Wow, it's double euphemism.
Oh, Lord.
Yes! And it counts. And then in the warning, we have some feedback from you guys. There wasn't a ton of response because we seemed to get most of the... most everyone was talking a lot about our conversation on matchmaking last week. That really got a lot of folks talking. And I don't know much there was to add to that beyond that, obviously everyone pointed out Halo Reach has some social functions in it. And there was a lot of debate back and forth about, you know, servers and so forth. But we've got that. And let's see. What else we got coming up? We got music from Del Rio with Mr.
Nice.
Perkins.
Nice.
It's okay.
Belated happy birthday to Del Rio. Actually, yeah. We wished him happy birthday,
yay,
but he wasn't
happy
here.
Birthday.
Happy birthday, Del Rio. Birthday.
You missed out. And then Zav has the news. He's back. He has the new and improved news segment with still no name.
It's like mixing news and the warning. We'll see how it goes.
It's a Zavlopedia.
It's newer than news.
Newer than news. Newsy news. Newsy news 2.0.
It's newsy news
2.0. It's the newsiest news you've ever newsed.
All right, so last week I said that I was getting into Dungeon Siege 3 just a little bit, and it was, you know, like a little hard to get into because it just doesn't show itself very well at the beginning.
And yeah, I'm at the beginning, and I'm noticing that as well.
All right, so since we talked about that earlier, what do you think about the beginning? It wasn't just me, was it?
Well, I think you played it too.
Yep.
Yeah, it's it doesn't not put its best foot forward. I'm hoping that you were going to tell me that changes.
Well, I think it depends a lot on how much you like that genre of, you know, going out and finding stuff in the first place. Do you like that?
I love stuff.
Like
the only
like...
thing I like more than stuff is things.
Things are awesome.
Loot patrol.
Yeah, I mean, do you like adjective noun of adjectives?
Yeah.
Okay, well, if you like that,
especially
then
especially if it's a
shape.
Plus one to something.
Because that's the that's the only vestige of the other two dungeon sieges that really carries over to this is that it's filled with all sorts of blank weapon of blank.
Yeah.
Or you know, it's like the vampiric axe of smashing or mace of smashing.
You're playing as the fire lady, right?
I am playing as the gun lady.
Oh, you're gun lady.
I'm her too. Like Katana or something. What's her name?
Katrina.
Who I knew evidently there's a K and a T.
Who evidently is broken if you use her skill tree in a certain way, she gets to where she's almost an insta-killer because of a couple of the combined skills they have in there that aren't very well balanced.
I started as the fire lady, and then I thought I remembered you saying you were playing as the fire lady, so I stopped and started again as the wizardy guy with the awesome belt.
Oh, he seems like he would be really hard by himself.
He is. But in an interesting way, because, you know, the whole game is built around these two stances. Each character has two stances.
Yes.
Fire Lady's two stances are not on fire and on fire.
That's how it is with Fire Ladies.
Yeah. But his stance.
You don't want to douse her flame.
No, you never do. His two stances are sort of like a up close one on one guy got in your range stance where I can just punch with electricity, or a super awesome magical attack that is much more damaging but has a an area that's directly in front of you that it does not affect. So the guys
like a
have
reverse
to be,
cone.
Yeah, it's a cone, but it's a cone with a sort of buffer in the mid-range that doesn't work in. So it's this kind of sweeping attack that happens, you know, like a yard or two in front of you.
So if
they're too close to you, they don't get affected by it at all. So you have to switch into your other attack if they get too close to you.
But
if you can keep them far away, you can do much more damage. So I like that dynamic. It does make it more difficult to play solo because he's clearly a support character who's supposed to have a melee assistant.
It's couch and internet co-op.
Yeah.
We can play anytime you want.
I would like that.
I would love to co-op some. Yeah, I would love to co-op. I would love to co-op some.
I don't want to play with the girl.
Except we're both Katrinas.
But you guys are both.
I know what you were thinking.
what were we thinking?
Are you guys all playing on 360?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm in. You know, I said I was going to put in the PC version, and what happened instead was I got past the entry hill and started playing the game, and I was like, oh, now I'm enjoying the game. I don't really want to go back through that part again because it really wasn't that fun, and I want to keep going with where I'm at.
And the side quests in like that first town, there was one of them that's really hard. Maybe I just found it really hard when you have to like go to the fishing pond and like kill the things in the water.
Oh, well,
fish?
No, they're not fish. I tried to do it because I was like, oh, since I'm here, I might as well do this guy a favor, right? No, I died.
That one does seem a little out of balance for where you could take it initially.
Well, it's like the very beginning of the game. I wouldn't assume a side quest would be that difficult.
I think that it's something that maybe the designers took into consideration there is that if you're at the beginning of the game, you might be drawn to just keep down the main path. And you could theoretically do that after you completed the first wave, you know, the first section of the quests to the main line and come back. And then you could go do that afterwards. It'd probably be a lot easier because, yeah, when those like walking fish things come out of the swamp monsters, when the swamp monsters come out, yeah, they're pretty tough.
Do they sound like this?
No, that's not even. That's like a drowning murloc.
Yeah, it's
not even.
It's
not even a good
impression.
Murlocs are more like.
That's kind of what I did. I think
it all sounds like turkeys to me.
Agreed.
My problem with this game is that the combat the combat
spit it out, boy.
Doesn't feel like you're actually
chunky.
Hitting anything. It doesn't feel chunky.
You always say chunky.
I like chunky combat. It doesn't feel visceral. It doesn't have any impact. There's no impact when you connect and when they connect with
if
you.
If we took all these words away from you, what would you use?
Silence, Garnet. That's what words are for on an audio podcast.
You know, I absolutely agree with you there because I remember the first couple playthroughs that I did, like you don't know when you're about to die because literally when you're getting hit, there's just like a little red number that pops up.
So that health bar, when it gets to the...
I'm not watching the health bar. I'm looking at the guys I'm supposed to be killing. The health bar is all the way at the bottom left-hand side of the screen. You know,
it's important. You might want to watch it.
Well, I agree. I'm saying that
are
I
Are you
agree
saying you don't
with
agree
Jeff
with this, Garnet?
That
are you just
it's
trolling?
It's not very visceral that a flash of red on the screen or something like splattered blood, something.
You want some blood splatter on the screen. You want that Gears effect.
No, there's no reaction from the the enemies or from your character.
They're just not squirters.
They just take damage.
You want more squirters.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yes and, Garnet. Yes and. Come on. Work with us here.
I don't need it to get that graphic, but I'm just saying that I agree with Jeff's point.
Thank you.
That is something that I don't particularly like about the game.
Do you have that feeling, or do you disagree? Or are you going to make
silly
noises?
Yo, dog! Telling you, it should be the yo dog.
I want some of what
episode.
You have.
I'd be glad to share it later.
Oh, my God.
Yo, dog!
This is why we can't have nice things.
Is it too late for me to leave?
One of many reasons. It doesn't really bother me because I played like so many of these games that I'm accustomed to, I'm jokingly saying that, but watching my health bar and watching my mana bar is something that I just naturally do in these sort of games because it's so important to manage those things. That was one of my frustrations that I had initially playing this game with not having a potion system because I'm so accustomed to watching the mana and the health and blowing off potions when I needed to maintain, you know, like you sort of get a feel for, depending on how heavy a fight you're in, like, oh, if I'm below 50% here and I'm losing health at this rate, then I need to blow off a potion now in order to not go all the way down so I can get powered back up again and not, you know, like you sort of get a rhythm to it, and this game doesn't have that rhythm to combat. And I think that's one of the things that I've enjoyed now is that it has a whole different rhythm to the combat. And it's all focused on that stance chain system, right?
Yeah.
Because it's forced, which I don't like, but it is interesting to be limited in what you can do based off your stance selection. Like, it seems odd to me that I can only heal my... Like somehow I can only cast my healing spell when I hold my gun out sideways and heal my and block. That doesn't really make a lot of sense to me intellectually. But from a game mechanic, it is cool that, you know, that I have to commit to doing a heal and then do the heal within the context of the combat. Because it does keep it from being like a crazy dodge roll game.
Yeah. I do find myself running around in circles because...
Oh, you run around a lot.
Yeah. So it is that.
And wait till you get to the harder... When you get to the heavier bosses...
I found myself running away from the enemies to like try to like back up to use my ranged attacks more. Because the character, you know, that you and I are both playing with, she's a ranged character. That's supposed to be like her strength. But I found myself in the stance where I was using more of like the double shooter guns instead because I just felt like the enemies were just... What?
Nothing. I'm just holding back the double shooter joke.
I really don't even see where you could have gone with that.
You know? Even...
My Lord.
But
all I can say is if you can't shoot twice, it's not my problem.
My gosh.
Jesus Christ.
What is wrong with set him? Me up.
If only you guys could see the way I rolled my eyes just now.
I actually find that she is quite versatile in both close-up and ranged combat because what happens is early on in her close stance, she has a pistol in one hand and a shotgun in the other. And the initial ones that you get are really weak. It's really funny because the first shotgun you have has like a 2 damage on it. You're like, wait, this is a fucking shotgun and it does 2?
Right.
This is stupid. But what happens is very quickly you find more powerful weaponry and then you combine it with her skill set and she's actually quite effective as a close-up fighter as well because she gets this ability that lets her knock people back from her and stun them. So it's quite actually good for her for crowd control to close in close, blow them all back, mow them down with her scatter guns because they do area of effect damage versus just singular attack. And then she can back out of that conflict and use her ranged weapon to pick people off. So there's a lot of strategy that comes in. And I think that's something that as I played the game more is I've come to appreciate the systems, which just makes me more frustrated that the game doesn't teach you how to play it very well.
Yeah,
that's a very good point. Like, I agree that I really do like doing the closer attacks with that character because I feel like that's the most effective way to fight. But I've not played any of the previous Dungeon Siege games, and I
it
really felt like
yeah.
I was
totally
it's
different.
A completely different game.
I felt like I was so confused going through. I almost like went to go look up the manual online, but I didn't because I was like, I can do this. I can figure it out. But I still feel like I'm not playing it the right way.
That's a great way to put it. You feel like for the first few hours of this game, you feel like you're not playing it the right way because it never shows you the right way to play it. And you have to sort of come to your own conclusions of how to play it.
I just don't feel like the combat it feels right. Like I said, it doesn't feel like I'm connecting even with powerful spells. I don't. Sometimes I'll get stuck in an animation that takes a little bit longer than it should.
I agree, it is a little clunky with the animations.
Yeah.
Especially like with Katrina, she has like this rifle triple shot with you, which if you get the timing right on her attack, she'll be like, you know, shot one, shot two, and then she like, you know, she like Oh, what was the name of that? She gunslingers it. She does like the gunslinger thing and flips it around and like cocks it and does like another shot. And if you get into that animation, then wherever you're aiming, like you're stuck. You're just totally, you're not going to aim a different direction. You're stuck in that animation.
And again, we're talking about Dungeon Siege 3, and the characters, there's a wide range of kinds of characters that that you can select from the outset, as we discussed, but I was hoping that each of them would have maybe a different beginning. I mean, you have this slightly different voiceover in the origin story, and then each of the sort of cutscene little, I don't know, hand-drawn, kind of painted things that you go to are done in such an abstract way that the character you're looking at could be male, could be female. You can't really so they can use the art for it. Doesn't matter which character you picked, the art sort of works either way. I just was hoping it would be more specific to the character that I selected rather than just have. I mean, I get it. I'm basically just picking a class to go through one story, but it would have been cooler, I think, if it had been multiple stories. I think if people are looking for a game like this, if they want this co-op, top-down, loot-grabbing, story-based, fantasy action game, get Sacred instead. Sacred is such a great, great game. Available on the 360 and the PC. Mm-hmm. You can probably get it for super cheap.
Dude, y'all know, you know I worshipped that game for life.
It's so good.
I piled up mega hours.
What about Torchlight?
Actually, if you're going to get Sacred... Get Sacred on the PC.
Yeah,
Sacred on the PC is
it doesn't have the glitches though.
Just the resolution and the art. I mean, it's where it's at. It's
but you know, some people find easier to kind of link up with their friends on the 360. You know, whatever you want, of course. But
Sacred is awesome.
It's great.
No argument there.
It is vastly outpaces this game as far as delivering that experience. I think.
Well, and it didn't try and reinvent these systems. And again, I think one of the things that is sort of intriguing to me now about Dungeon Siege is how it has done some of those things interestingly. But that they don't always make sense to me, like the whole stance change thing. Just I still haven't clicked that. But I do really, 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 as I've gotten into it more, like the you get all of your skills for your class and then you decide how you want to improve them based off of two branches. I think that's really cool. Mm. And for having made fun of the lore last time, it's actually better than I thought it was. The story part, the lore part, like although the storytelling element of the storyboards is kind of meh.
Yeah.
And having you read a bunch of books is very like very two gens ago.
Mm-hmm.
The actual narrative pieces of it that come together are for video game fantasy acceptable. I mean, I realize that's not a ringing endorsement, but it gives it a good framework.
But didn't Shadows of the Damned have sort of like that same idea of reading those books to get some of that lore?
Well, yeah, but like, okay.
And Skyrim has like 300 books in it.
But Shadows of the Damned, Garcia and Johnson read them out loud in dramatic style.
And it's more
and
like.
It's freaking hilarious.
It's more like a little cartoon of ridiculousness more than it is just lore. I mean, it is lore, but it's also wacky kids.
It's like a
story.
Radio play.
Yeah,
I guess my take on the lore would be that if you spend the time to read it up, that there is obviously a lot of canon that went into this to give it framework so that there's a lot of grounding to it. But at the end of the day, you're still just, I mean, it is a loot crawl. It's a good loot crawl. It's fun. There are better ones. Is better.
It's so much better.
Torchlight's way better.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's even a different class of those are just like Diablo, and you know,
Sacred is
different than that.
Sacred's much more like. Oh, you're saying Sacred's like Dungeon Siege?
Yes,
okay,
I feel like maybe Dungeon Siege 3. I haven't played nearly as much as you have. Is more comparable to a Torchlight, but Dungeon Siege traditionally has been much more of that role playing world experience, whereas Torchlight. Diablo, those are, I think, distilled down to an essence of pure fighting and loot. Mm-hmm. And maybe Dungeon Siege 3 turns out to be that, but Sacred and like the older Dungeon Sieges and those have much more world building, much more story side
story
quests.
What eventually happens is you're starting to put back together the Legion.
Yeah.
So it gets back to having
it's not really any of that in Diablo or Torchlight. Torchlight and Diablo
is saying that
kill
those
the
are
big
more
bet.
Narratively focused and the other games focus more on that mechanic.
More narrowly focused.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, I mean, there's obviously a story in all those games, but it's much more just get down in the dungeon and kill a lot of stuff, you know?
Well, if you really want story, you should play Final Fantasy XIII. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Are you going to finish that game?
I don't know. I might finish that game. I actually put it back in.
You know, I like it.
I like it a lot, too. And I put it back in on Monday night, and I started playing it, and like the first, like after the first hour, I was like, why did I ever put this down?
Because there was like a million other things that came out.
Yeah, I guess it was just distractions. Because I really like that game. I forgot how much I really like that game. And then people were all hating on it. And I think that probably... Well, I don't want to put words in people's mouths. I mean, if you don't like the game, you don't like the game. That's certainly a prerogative. But if you don't like the game and you haven't played it, then don't belittle us for liking what we like out of it. Like, the combat system in that game
is really, really unique. Yes.
And one of the things that I hadn't appreciated maybe enough when I was first playing it is that one of the things that I first thought was going to be weird when I demoed it and then found out worked when I played it is even more clear to me now how really, like, creative it is how good the AI has to be to pick what to do properly when you use the auto battle. Because the whole thing about this game is, I think this is one of the things that was a turnoff for a lot of people, is you don't say, well, I'm a red mage, so I'm going to cast a Fyra right now, or I'm going to cast Faraga. Like, you're not, if you're down picking individual abilities for your character, then you're fighting the game system. It's certainly a prerogative. You can certainly do that if you want. But the whole idea of the game is that you move one step back from that, because people say, oh, well, you only control one character. Well, you actually control all three, but if you're controlling them the way the game wanted you to, which is to tell them, well, I want you to be the role of a medic right now, and yeah, I want you to be the role of a saboteur, and I want you to be the role of a ravager. And then knowing what each of those classes is good at and what the enemy is that you're facing, balancing around between those. And like, especially when you go to heavier fights, you're switching really, really quick. You know, you're in a paradigm.
It's awesome.
And you realize two move sets into your current paradigm that you need to switch to another paradigm. So your L1 switch to that paradigm. And then maybe you're watching the animations, because when you make that, you know, when you make that commitment to changing paradigms, determines where in the animation sequences you interrupt them. So, you know, you don't want to, you know, maybe you need that last cure out of your medic, and as soon as that fires off, then you're ready to switch right into your next paradigm. Or maybe you realize, oh, I just saw two go off. Looks like I'm good. I can go ahead and cancel and go in right here. Like, that, there's a lot of meaty combat thought that can go into it. It's just a different sort of game.
It's a strategy game. You are really acting much more as a coach of a team than you are, which is what I always thought, is that the game plays much more like you're coaching this team and deciding what, you know, how to swap in and out your personnel,
yeah,
or the activities of your personnel. You're gonna run the triangle offense right now, or whatever.
That's a good way to put it.
And I always was hoping that this kind of idea would get taken and placed into other kinds of games, because I think it's absolutely brilliant. Rather than the paradigm of paradigm's a wrong word to use in this situation because it's in the game, but the notion that, you know, I'm a character, I control my character, I control the specific actions of each of these characters. It's more like I'm throwing plays in, I'm throwing situational roles in for these characters, and they know how to handle those things on their own, but the flow of the battle dictates, you know, how my personnel should be applied. And I find it fascinating and totally unique and interesting. And people that sort of throw the baby out with the bathwater because they found the game a little too linear, I think, are missing out on a really sublime system.
Well, it is completely linear.
Yeah.
And you know what? I also have, and I've talked about this before, but I'm reminded that I like that sort of game when I want to play that sort of game. Like, I enjoy the storytelling elements. I enjoy the characters. I enjoy the art. I enjoy the music. Yes, obviously I like anime, and in the first place, that probably gives me a proclivity to enjoying this sort of game. But I enjoy it. I like it. I think one of the things that also struck me coming at it from having not played it for a while as to why other Final Fantasy fans may have not taken to this quite so well is, did anyone ever stop to think that in 13, I think, I could be corrected on this, but I think it's the first time in a Final Fantasy game that once you sort of had the gang together, that they weren't together, they were actually at odds with one another. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm especially thinking back to, for instance, Final Fantasy 8, because 8 was, everyone called it, you know, like the 90210 of Final Fantasies. But in all of the other games I can think of, in 7 and 9 and 10, in 12. Once you had your group together, everyone was, you know, shared bond against a common cause, pulled together people from different walks of life, and they all fought together, and you know they were united in their hopes to go save the world. It's not like that at all in 13. In 13, there's a whole lot of inner rivalries. You know, Hope is mad about what's happened to his mom, and Lightning wants to take care of his sister, and they're both pissed off at Snow, and Snow just wants his fiance back.
The only one that does not care about Final Fantasy at all?
Yes.
I just don't.
No, I'm not saying
they're bad games. I'm just not interested in them.
No, you're not
at all.
I think the whole
series has kind of lost its relevance, as you can tell from the complete lack of coverage of 13-2.
Okay, so we can come back to that. But since you're on the wavelength with me, do you think that has anything to do with why fans didn't like it? Because they just felt like, well, why are these guys squabbling with each other?
They were quibbling and squabbling, or whatever you said.
damn it.
I think that's a layer deep into it that I don't think that most people got. I think most people were turned off by the linear sort of hand-holding.
Well, if you look at X2 or 13-2, what they're changing, they're taking away the linearity. They're taking away some of those systems. They're streamlining a lot of that stuff, and they're adding things that people said that they didn't like about.
Well, the other thing, like, you know, 13. The thing people got pissed off about.
Andrea, why don't you care? Did you play 13?
Nope, so I did not.
So you don't care because
you just don't like the franchise
The franchise is never like those androgynous characters never really spoke to me.
You hate Japanese people.
No, I wouldn't say that. That's a very bold statement that I will not agree to.
You hate their culture and their way of life. Everything they hold dear.
Apparently Final Fantasy.
I don't look at a game like that and get excited about it. There's nothing about it that goes, ooh, that's gonna be amazing. I don't know.
Lit my fire. The motorcycle that turns into a robot person?
No, I did not.
That's pretty amazing.
Sky airships, really cool.
It's a motorcycle. And then it turns into actually two.
I'm willing to be sold.
Can you tell me that?
You know what a motorcycle is, right?
Yeah.
It's like a car, but it has only two wheels.
Okay, yeah,
it goes really fast and it looks awesome.
I think I've seen
you got
them.
That right.
Yeah.
And you know what a person is, and you can imagine what two people would be like standing in the street.
Right.
And they have like robot parts.
How about a baby bird that lives in his hair?
Nah, no, that's a little weird.
It's cool. So you hate black people as well?
Oh, Kanata.
Oh, I'm glad I've gotten inside. You see, it only took 20 minutes, and already I've got you wound
Damn
up, too.
It. Damn
yes!
It.
Yo, dog, what's
you,
up?
I'm just bored of the Final Fantasy combo.
You can't be bored. You never played them.
I can, too.
You can't be bored with something you never tried.
I am not allowed to say I don't like them as games and the game mechanics because I've never played them.
They just don't interest you.
They just don't interest me. I'm not saying they're bad because clearly they would be at, 13-2 if they were bad.
Do
right?
you like,
agreed?
Sure. But I have a suspicion that you actually are not a fan of any of the Japanese role-playing game genre.
You may be correct there.
Huh.
Go figure. I do like role-playing games, just not of the Japanese fashion.
You like the more Western-style ones?
Yes.
We caught you. Mm. You're a racist.
Whatever. Nintendo is like my jam. I love their stuff.
Nintendo is your jam. Well, you know, that's why they don't need to bring Japanese role-playing games for the Wii over to America.
So, Zev, how do you feel about 13?
I played 13 for a little bit, and I got to that point where I think everyone did it, where you had to make a decision whether or not you wanted to keep playing it and get past, I guess, that tutorial lull, I guess I can call it, and continue, and apparently it opens up once you get to that point, and it turns into a completely different game. And it was at a time where there was so much out at the time that I didn't keep playing it, and it's still on my shelf. I do want to play it though, and I do like the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Are
you excited about 13 too?
I am cautiously optimistic.
How about you, Zav?
I mean, I want to finish this one before I even think about getting the 13.
Really? You want to?
I do want to try. I do.
But now
play.
That you mentioned, Shane keeps saying how the last boss is just retarded, and I shouldn't use that word. It's stupid, and
that's just, Shane.
I know,
he probably didn't do it right.
He supposedly, you know.
He probably didn't do it right.
Oh, so you've beat it?
No.
Okay, so you don't know.
I'm just.
All right,
how can you say that he's
I'm
wrong?
I'm just guessing. He probably just didn't do it right.
Andrea's looking up random pictures on the.
All right, this is obviously a good sign that we should take a little break. Yeah. When we come back on the other side, we will talk about non-role-playing games like the Uncharted 3 beta. Oh, actually, do you want to talk about some Witcher 2?
Sure.
We can still talk about some Witcher 2 when we come back. Some Ocarina of Time, all that and more when we continue. And to look forward to, yes?
Another kind of fantasy role-playing game. Just
what's that? Ocarina. Well, right. That's why I said it, because I was like, okay, well, actually, we have some more role-playing games here. We also have, coming up a little later on, some music by our very own producer, Del Rio, with Mr. Woo-hoo. Perkins helping him out. So lots to look forward to. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a moment. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from shacknews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. All right, we are back for more. Coming up in a little bit, we are still going to talk about some things like whether or not some of these games that we were talking about here a moment ago, Diablo and maybe Zelda games, are the games we really look forward to. But when Pretenders to the Throne come out, we play them just to be thinking about those games we love. I'll let you know more in a minute when we do the warning here.
Let's make a game called Pretenders to the Throne.
Pretenders to the Throne. That would be kind of awesome, especially if it was anything to do with Game of the Thrones. Did you see that crazy article about whether or not there are too many boobs in Game of Thrones? Like, you know what? Like, TV writers,
there's
I realize it's summer.
There's a lot of boobs in Game of Thrones.
As long as it's an even number,
isn't
that's
it
all I care
about.
Lots
you
of
know
boobs.
What?
Like,
preach
unnecessary
it.
Boobs.
It's on HBO, though.
What?
That's
yeah,
not
no,
television.
No, but
that's
boobs like that belong on Showtime.
No, wait. Unnecessary boobs would be like Ned Stark showing his boob. That would be an
also,
unnecessary
guys,
boob.
That's my band we're playing on Thursday night.
Unnecessary boobs.
Unnecessary boobs.
Brilliant.
Wait, and they're a cover band of?
Tears for Fears. First thing that came to my head.
Wow. All right, so there you go.
I just want to say we are less than a week till A Dance with Dragons. So, readers, unite. I know there may be a few of them left.
What's reading again?
Yeah.
You can read it on your Kindle.
I'm going to.
Oh, nice. I didn't know you had a Kindle.
Oh, yeah.
Sweet. Okay, so Earth Defense Force would be the next thing we need to talk about because that obviously was the best game of the week.
All right.
You guys hate... I'm forewarning. I am the lover and these two are the haters.
I'm gonna, Andrea,
hate away.
Feel free to fight. Begin.
At first glance, my thought was, wow, this game looks like it could be super cool. What? 300 weapons?
Awesome.
I'm in.
Awesome.
5 minutes in, I'm like, oh man, what a waste of $40.
That's just a troll. You sound like an internet poster.
I am an internet poster.
So what happened at 5 minutes?
Why did you hate
explain,
it?
Explain.
The game punched her directly in the mouth.
It stole $40.
I mean, I think the destructible element is kind of cool, where you can tear the buildings down and stuff. But I mean, I just think that's it just felt
all
a little clunky.
This game is full of camp. The whole point of Earth Defense Force is to have a fun, crazy romp sort of game. It's not meant to be serious any more than going to see Destroy All Earthlings was supposed to be some kind of serious game, although it's not quite as completely off the wall and stupid as that was.
Right.
Have you ever watched that movie in retrospect?
No.
It's bad. Don't watch it again. If you had fond memories of it from when you first saw it a decade ago, just leave those there because it didn't age particularly well. But these as may. The whole point of this game is that it's just crazy fun. You have all these giant ants crawling all over buildings in New Detroit and walking robots, and you get tanks and tons of weapons, and there's four class. It's all about just jumping in, blasting the shit out of shit, and not having to put a lot of mental energy into it. And it's really fun for that. It's really fun for that.
You know what's a better game that does that? Trenched.
Word.
Trenched is a wholly different sort of game, although I would say that maybe, the thing with Trenched is that I want to get to some later levels because I've only played the first five, and those electro things are pretty bland.
The monovisions?
What? They're pretty bland.
What?
Are you saying that the ants that roll around in Earth Defense Force are exciting to shoot at, but the same electric things are...
I cannot believe that I just heard
what
you.
What the shit are you even talking about anymore?
Thank you, Zav. I lost the ability to speak. You just tore the words out of my mouth. Those electro things are vastly more interesting than giant ant that looks exactly
like
the last
700
of them. Wait,
no, because ants, when you look at ants, usually they're like this small, and now they're like huge now, so totally
different
situation. They're
giant ants.
All right.
And this isn't Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Like, I don't need giant ants in my life.
Earth Defense Force, it's a fun idea, and it's fun for about a minute and a half, but it doesn't do anything other than what you do in that first minute and a half. It stays that game for the next forever. And it doesn't do that particularly well.
And you can do it with up to four players playing together
so
online.
So you can do it with Trenched. Trenched is vastly superior in every way.
They're two different games, though.
Two very different games.
Trenched is a strategy game at its core, I think. And Earth Defense Force game, that game is more like of a budget romp shooter.
I'm not going to sit here.
But it's not budget. That's the thing.
Trenched,
I mean,
it's cheaper.
You can get Trenched on, you know, downloadable for...
Earth Defense Force should be cheaper.
Yes.
Agreed.
How much
would be a downloadable?
$39? $40?
$40.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a little too much.
It should be a downloadable game.
Comparatively, even like throwing dollar bill signs out the window, I'm not going to argue that Trenched isn't a better game. Trenched is a superior game. However, that doesn't mean that Earth Defense Force isn't a lot of fun. It's great fucking stupid fun.
I'm
not
pleased
saying it's
that
not
fun.
It's just not the kind of fun I want to have. If I'm going to have fun, I'd rather have fun with a game that's better. That's all.
I think it's cool that they gave you four different classes. I think there's a ton of space. Like you said, how many weapons is it? 300 weapons?
300, yeah.
Like, there's so many ways to upgrade your characters. There's so many different ways to play with those four class types, and they're all interesting. They all have good alt fires, and then you have tanks, and you're shooting giant insects that are crawling all over buildings, and it's
the
awesome.
The game does go really crazy. I mean, is there only the one class that can fly as well, which I think is really cool.
The sniper energy weapon guy.
Yeah, see, that's a game that I don't think you need a sniper rifle in.
Well, he's not really he's not.
I want to get that. Oh, I hit the wrong ant.
Shoot him in
Jesus.
The thorax.
Exactly.
Oh. What's a thorax? I was kidding.
It's the axe that the God of Thunder uses.
Oh, nice. It's part of the ant. The sniper guy is not so much a sniper guy as so much as he is a longer range weapon. They have limited differentiation between the classes. You know, there's a heavy guy who has like an energy shield, and then they have like, you know, an all purpose guy who doesn't have as much armor but can carry all kinds of different weapons. And then you have the tactician guy who he's fun. The tactician guy drops. What?
Tactics, kill all the ants, guys. Here is the tactic.
Kill the ants.
I don't know.
It's a very complex motive.
I found myself living on the mini map, just looking for red dots. Not
okay, fine. You know what? I think the reason that
I'm glad you had fun with it.
I think the other reason that I like this game is I was always jealous when I worked at 1UP that I was like not Scott Sharkey, because we'd come back from Steph's and we'd be drunk. And he'd get to go play Earth Defense, and I would have to go edit shit.
Mm. Okay.
So that's where this rage is coming from.
It's not rage.
Should we get one of those like
just
couches
now,
that you can
lay
down?
How do you feel about your mother?
Now I can go home and, you know, have a couple of pops and shoot ants. And it's awesome.
Don't say pops. You don't even know what you're doing. Pops.
Oh, it's going to be like that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You want to have an eyebrow war? I can do this all day.
Perfect for radio, by the way.
Yeah, like that's really working. She's like, hold on, we're going to have eyebrow war. Yeah, anyway. But yeah, I mean, we used to always, like, it used to be funny because, like, we'd come back from going to Steph's and Scott would play that game. And I guess I just sort of got into this, like, I got it. Like, it's fun. It's just stupid fun. It doesn't require, like, even Trenched to a degree requires that you think some. You have to think about which call-ins am I going to use? Which ones am I going to go upgrade? Because that brings in, like, that tower defense element.
Wait a minute. Now you're contradicting yourself. You were just talking about how it's so cool that there's four different classes and you can do all these different things with them and there's all these different weapons. That sounds complicated to me.
Now she fucking pays attention. Christ.
Whatever. I've been paying attention the whole time when you were boring me with Final Fantasy.
I don't know what's going on this episode, everyone.
Floodgate.
I'm just here. I want to talk a little bit about Trench, because I started playing Trench this week, and I don't mean to bring it up just as in comparison, right. But it is a similar kind of thing. You're dealing with waves of enemies. You're trying to survive as long as you can. I love the fiction of this universe. Having a giant mech body with legs with a basically World War II sandbag front. That's brilliant. Brilliant. Wonderful.
That's the Trench.
I know. I love it. And I think the design of the bad guys, it's basically TV is the bad guy, right? The tubes. Brilliant. Great co-op gameplay, like you said, strategic elements, having this kind of tower defense. It's similar. People were going crazy about Monday Night Combat.
Mm-hmm. You should go crazy about Monday Night Combat.
I think this is much more fun than this, than that. I had a good time with Monday
different.
Night Combat. Of course they're different, but I think Trenched is a really, really refined version of this, and it's super fun. It's like the multiplayer mode in a larger game, mm-hmm. But just the multiplayer mode, you know?
Right.
And
which is how a lot of those Double Fine downloadable games feel like.
Yeah.
It feels like chunks of a bigger game that they've just slimmed down. I mean, this is what you said about Trenched in the beginning, that it felt a little bit like Brutal Legend. I love that they're those downloadable games that we're getting four games now from them that are, you know, a studio that typically releases a game every couple of years.
Yeah, it's
that
great.
Part of it is great. And it's so funny.
Yeah.
It's so hilarious.
It's got more personality, I think, than three other games. You know, it's great. And I think I'm really glad that I took the time to check it out because it's I can't wait to assemble a team of four and try to see how long we can survive. It's super fun.
Yeah, and the matchmaking is actually pretty fun. Like, I was on the other night and just was playing with a couple random people, and we had a really great time. Obviously, you know, it's more fun when you play with people you know,
definitely.
But...
Mm-hmm. You should get Gatling Gears, too.
Yeah, I should.
It's really fun.
I'm going to, yeah.
But it's more like Akari Warriors, right? But you're in Gears and top-down, but it's also really fun. It has a lot of fun with that. Too many good games to play, and we're like, what? Three weeks now from the beginning of Summer of Arcade.
Yeah, the onslaught of...
It's funny, like we talked about
not even that long. I think it's 2 weeks.
It's 20th. Oh yeah, so it's 2 weeks. You're right. It's two mm-hmm. weeks till Bastion's out. And there were people playing on my friends list playing From Dusk last night, and I was like, oh, I want to play.
Yeah,
From
I saw
Dusk.
That too.
Well, now it's been announced that it's going to be on the PSN and the PC.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, later this month, I think. Yeah.
Like the 27th, just a week or two, like just right after.
For the PC, at least, yeah.
Man, there's too damn many good games.
And
someone
I'm still
pointed
trying
out.
To, you know, finish my backlog.
I was
playing Witcher 2, trying to finish that game up.
And? How far are you into Witcher 2?
I'm very near the end.
Wow.
From what I understand. Wow. I think there's an epilogue, but I think I'm very near the end. In fact, you know, remember a while back I brought up that whole thing about do you want to play a game or do you want to have played a game? You know, do you want to enjoy the experience or do you want to say that you finished it, you know? And I found myself conflicted in Witcher 2 because I have this kind of short period of time where there's nothing pressing that I need to play and I can play Witcher 2 and I'm really enjoying it. I'm playing it for fun, for me. But there was one moment where I got into a conversation with a character and she said, are you sure you want to, is there anything else you need to do here or do you want to go forward and, you know, do the next part of this quest? And I went, go forward. And as soon as I said, go forward, this big moment started and it said, quest fail, quest fail, quest fail, which is what it does when you can't go back to finish up those quests.
Dude.
And I went, hurr! Every part of my being hates this. I want to go to a save game and just do because I'm such a, especially with role playing games that I love, I need to do all the quests.
Right.
I feel like they're depending on me. That dude is depending on me to save his daughter from the gargoyles.
That
I need
would
to...
piss me off so bad.
Yeah, and I hate that it says quest fail too because it's not quest fail. It's quest ignore.
Yeah,
it's quest ignore. I didn't fail. I just didn't succeed.
What they should do is have like a cutscene of like all the people that you killed piling up,
weeping.
They're like mothers crying, and they're like kids are like in this
but
mass
you
burial.
Said you'd help
you
us.
You said you'd help us, Jeff. You bastard. Wow, someone might actually do that. That would be really. Can you imagine how horrible?
So I was stuck in this conundrum of like, do I go back and load my save game? And I know it's going to be a several hours of finishing up these three quests that I said I failed because I didn't do them. Or do I press forward and finish this game up because I know I want to finish it and see the end and all that stuff? But
well, now, if it's your first playthrough, I say keep going. If it's like your second playthrough.
Dude, you're not doing multiple playthroughs. Well, most of us are not doing multiple playthroughs in The Witcher.
I unfortunately can't, yeah.
Like well, I was going to ask you because there is that moment in the beginning of the game where you have to make a choice and the game can change very drastically.
Oh, there's several moments like
that. Do you want, were you thinking about maybe going back to see what could have been different?
I ain't got that kind of time.
Really?
I'm also trying to catch up on Breaking Bad before the 17th when it starts.
I haven't seen season 3 at all.
I know. I'm like halfway through season 3 and it's awesome, dude.
Shut up.
It's so awesome.
Can we get a cleanup in the main studio, please?
But you know what? That moment, literally that moment, made me stop playing the game.
Breaking Bad?
No. The moment where I knew I was pressing forward, and I was I'm not ready to make this decision right now.
But you're going to go ahead and finish anyway, right?
I am. But
it was just frustrating for that to happen at the in the moment, right?
Yeah, and I was like, you know what? I can't handle this kind of pressure of deciding to either go forward or not.
Mattis was telling me he had to restart his game entirely because it broke.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he saved the game, and it saved in a weird spot where he got stuck, and then he had no previous save, so he had to lose a couple of hours, or I think he had to restart the whole thing.
I really like that game a lot. I find the fiction to be so well realized and so subtle and political and interesting. I find the graphics do go a long way in making me excited to complete those side quests, because if I'm able to, you know, create a piece of armor or get a specific trophy, all of it shows up and I am satisfied by looking at how cool I look. Right. And there's so many interesting nooks and crannies in the world to discover. It's really I think needs to be on the short list of best RPG at the end of the year, because though it is heavily flawed, and I think the
I haven't heard any, I mean, I've heard people say that it was like, you know, had glitches and like some things they didn't like, but I haven't heard anyone really say heavily flawed.
Well, I think the over reliance on boss fights that are poorly designed, and
I heard the last one's horrible.
Yeah, that's what I hear too. I think I might be at it. I don't know. But there's insta-deaths, lots of insta-deaths.
Not a fan.
Yeah, exactly.
Not
right?
a fan of insta-deaths.
And I think that's a bad design choice, and I would consider that a flaw in the game. But there's so much to like that, and there's so few of these kinds of games being made, I think, these really deep, rich, well-realized worlds.
Very curious to see what happens on the 360 version.
Yeah.
Very curious to see, because at the rate I'm going, I'm not going to have a new PC before it comes out on 360, because I'm just...
You might just wait. I mean, it's
I'm not,
this fall.
I'm not waiting intentionally. I mean, one of the things that I realized, so last week, you know, my finishing move was hop on your you know, backlog list, hop on your pile of shame, and unintentionally... I think Final Fantasy 13 is going to be my lead my charge. And the other thing I realized is that I need to be better economizing about how many games I start. You know, for instance, I've played around with Earth Defense Force now a little bit. I really liked it. But if it comes down to Trenched or Earth Defense Force, I'm probably going to play Trenched. I liked Gatling Gears some, but if it comes down to Gatling Gears or Trenched, I'm probably going to play Trenched.
What made you pick up Final Fantasy 13? Was it 13-2 on the horizon that made you?
I don't know. I think it was that. I think it was playing Dungeon Siege and thinking that I wanted to go back, and I love role-playing games, and it had been a long time since I played a role-playing game. And then, like, once I was into just the Western and then maybe the looting thing, I was like, you know what I really want to play? I really want to play a good, like, story-driven Japanese role-playing game.
Maybe we've seen that Square Enix on the box there that got you, that tipped you that.
It could be something as silly and subliminal as that. It really could.
I mean, I started playing Uncharted 2 again after playing the Uncharted beta.
Really?
Yeah. Multiplayer or the actual game?
The actual game. The single player of the game. Hmm. I mean, I wrote this on Twitter the other day that I thought that franchise is probably like one of my favorite franchises this generation.
It's so good.
The story is so good. The characters are so fun. I mean, there's elements of, you know, the first and second game that I don't really like. I mean, the shooting in the first game wasn't great, and then the whole, like, those enemies at the end of the game, those, like, zombie things were really strange. I mean, I Uncharted 2 kind of teased that with those monsters that you end up finding out what they are, which I was okay with, but...
It's the same kind of thing. It's the same kind of thing. Game at the end.
Exactly.
And the last boss of 2 is stupid.
Yeah. It's stupid. Just like
it's
the one.
It's the big glowy thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, there's some blue goop you got to get.
Yeah.
You
know?
There's that. And then the first one wasn't any better, or was like the guy on the boat. You know what I mean? So it was, you know.
The first one was almost basically a QTE.
Yeah.
Pretty much. But so Uncharted 3, the multiplayer beta, they updated it. And I don't know if you guys have played the new modes at all. There's one in particular that's co-op hunter. So co-op. Before, I think Billy was talking about it last episode, where you play basically a horde mode, but it changes objectives. Like Killzone did this in their multiplayer, where you're playing an online game, and then it continuously changes objectives, and you're playing against the computer. This new mode that they've introduced for the beta is called Co-op Hunter, and it's you and another person versus two other people. So it's competitive in the co-op mode.
Except that the other two people
has a whole bunch of AI-driven horde people on their side as well.
I don't really like this mode.
I don't at all. I don't at all. So this is what I was thinking. The reason why I like playing co-op games is because I kind of get bored of competitive multiplayer games, so I want to play co-op because I do like playing with my friends, but at least we could play co-op. injecting competitive into co-op, I think, is just like, what is the purpose of this? I don't understand why that they thought that that would be a great idea. Because what ends up
happening...
Well,
that's not the reason that I don't like it, but that's interesting. Go ahead.
The what ends up happening is that, you know, you play Horde, if you play a game like Horde, it's sort of you are trying to, you know, outdo this AI that's been designed to run in these arenas against right. you. But when you're playing against other people in those same situations, they have all of that AI you have to worry about. But then you have real people that are doing, you know, insane stuff like chucking grenades like crazy, or, you know, they go after you. I mean, it's obviously you're playing against two people who are hyper intelligent. It's like playing against hyper intelligent AI. But it's just, it's not fun to me when I want to play a co-op mode with my friends and then you have to play against two people. It's like, okay, this combination does.
Maybe we are frustrated the same thing is. Because what bugs me is when I'm on the. So the way this game match sets up is that one team starts out playing as the treasure hunters, mm-hmm. and their job is to go get treasure inside the map, bring it back to the treasure box, and deposit it there to score. The other team is trying to stop them from doing that. The problem I have is when you're on the hunter's side and you are being pursued by the two live people plus all these hordes of AIs, is that it's really disruptive when you realize that there's someone in the space with you that you need to fight and not know whether they're AI or real.
Yes, because what ends up happening is like when you play against the AI, you see them taking cover and you kind of understand the strategy behind how they work. But then when you don't know it's a real person until you get close to them, that strategy gets thrown out the window. And it's sort of like it turns into just regular competitive multiplayer that, you know, it's that one of the maps already has this part where a siren will go off and then an airplane will fly down and start shooting at you. There are these elements that you recognize that are happening. But then when you inject something else like two other people, yeah. that strategy that you had for that situation kind of gets thrown out.
And I can see the design meeting where they're like, oh, this will be cool because by having real people in there, it'll prevent it from being so predictable, right? But the problem is that the AI is not, in a sense, predictable. It just has a certain mentality under which it operates, which is why there's so many of them. There's a horde of AI because you know they're not going to be as smart as a real person playing them. So to compensate for that, they get superior numbers. In this case, you get superior numbers to a degree of some AI, plus you get two wild cards who are real people that are also stalking you.
Yeah.
And the people and if the people have played the game very often and know how to use the AI, it can really be manipulated to screw you up because they can just wait until you engage the AI, run out your clip, and come up behind you, and now all of a sudden they're in this.
So your big complaint is that it's imbalanced.
It's imbalanced.
Yeah, I mean, what ended up happening when I was playing it, because that entire mode is like Plunder, is the two people would just wait on the roof of a
exactly.
building and wait and just look at where you're supposed to go. Then me and I was playing with Andrew Yoon, who's a fellow editor at Check News, we would go to try to drop in the treasure and we would have to battle the AI, but then these two guys were just waiting for us and then sniping us as we got close to it. So it's not fun. Like, I don't know where the fun in that is. At least when you're playing Plunder, you have – it's an even match where you have people fighting each other to try to get this common goal.
Yep.
Whereas this, it's two people against AI you have to worry about and these two, you know, people, there's real life people. And it's just – it's not fun to me.
Would it be more fun if it was just the two on two?
That's Plunder and that's already
that's
in the
Plunder.
Game.
That's Plunder. That's in there, yeah.
You know what
because,
I mean?
Because, I mean, that at least brings in – because what eventually happens to has to happen is that – you get to the point where you're going to fight the people who are defending it. You drop the treasure or you chunk it over by the treasure chest, mm-hmm. and then you have the fight. And if you win the fight, then you run over and throw the treasure in the treasure chest. It's not like that's the mechanic yeah. of how you be successful at the game. You don't try and fight carrying the treasure because when you're carrying the treasure, you're really weighed down and it messes yeah. you up.
It's a battle of inches when you play it like this.
Yeah.
I mean, you're picking up something and you're throwing it as far as you can to try to run there and put it in as quickly as you can.
So the other team doesn't have to also get treasure? Both teams are simultaneously?
They just have to stop you.
I think that would make it better if both teams had to try to collect as much treasure as possible at the same time try to prevent...
Well, there's a flip.
...the other team from
yeah,
getting...
Yeah, it does flip later.
It flips.
But I mean at the same time. I don't mean yeah. take turns. I mean both teams at the same time are trying to collect as much treasure as possible. At the same time, you want to stop the other team, but
yeah,
like,
I mean,
you
maybe
also want to collect.
I mean, this mode is an attack and defend mode. I get where the mechanic comes from. I just think that... I don't know. It's just it needs something.
To me, I mean, we saw a similar mechanic in certain objective-based games in Brink that were like when you were the defending team versus the offensive team, one team clearly had an advantage. Like there was many modes where the defending team clearly had the advantage, and it seems like in this mode,
not if you don't suck.
You're just throwing insults in the middle of my point that I'm trying to make.
Worked.
Be constructive. Damn it. Or I'm going to poke you with my pencil.
You know that's Garnet Lee at the end of the end of the table.
Yes, I do. Okay. I do. No, but what I'm saying is, like, clearly it seems like it's, like Jeff said, it's not balanced. And maybe the way to balance it is to give both people an objective.
Or give both of them AI partners.
Yeah.
Like, what's the difference? I mean, there's already a ton of guys. And then a lot of them are the super powerful people that you need to put, like, three or four clips into. So
I think that it's salvageable with some balancing, and I think that one of the nice things about a beta is that they're accumulating a metric ton of player data.
And this is a beta because it's crashed on me a ton of times.
Well, I think you know, one thing that we don't think about anymore in a beta, when we talk about betas, a lot of times we get caught up in the old world definition of them being strictly about software stability. In a modern world of player testing, beta has a ton to do with them gathering data, looking at player tendencies, and figuring out how to rebalance maps, balance weapons, balance armor, do all those sorts of things that make the final product a better tweaked, better final experience. And I know they're doing that here.
I will say that I'm disappointed that when you play the regular co-op mode and you play like the airstrip level, it starts off in the trucks. You don't start on the plane, which I really like the plane. Although when you play that plane section 5 or 6 times in a row, it gets super boring because it's so quick. And then it stops in the middle of it with a cutscene, and then you have to, you know, that part of it bothers me. Yeah.
So after all these action games we've talked about, Andrea, is it worth trying to turn on Transformers, you think, then? Because Jeff loved the movie.
I love the movie. Why are you such a hater today? Someone drank their Haterade this morning.
Garbage.
No, it's awesome. It's spectacular, fun, and it's the summer movie. It's the biggest and baddest summer movie ever.
I haven't seen Transformers.
I really enjoyed
movie.
The movie. I thought that there was a lot of people. You know what pisses me off? It pisses me off that people take a movie like Transformers and are like, "Ooh, the dialogue sucks. That chick is stupid. Shia LaBeouf is ugly." I'm like, Transformers isn't about the people.
Wait,
it's about the Transformers.
Isn't this?
So why is there so goddamn many people in it?
I thought
this was a remake of Casablanca. Am I wrong?
In order to appeal to people outside of the core Transformers audience to go mass commercial appeal, you have to have a human storyline, clearly. I mean, that's just like the connection, because people who didn't grow up loving the Transformers and the Transformers lore and know all about the Decepticons and the Autobots and like their history, they need to identify with the human, you know, the human characters.
So in the Transformers
film.
Game, you spend a lot of time driving a tank and firing it at Transformers.
No, the Transformers game doesn't have humans in it.
Oh. I heard that in the Transformers game, there's not even a lot of transforming.
That's not true at all.
Really?
No. I mean, it's you're constantly transforming between the Stealth Force combat mode and your robot form. Now, I talked to some people saying how they thought that the Stealth Force combat mode was...
Obviously.
What?
I'm just like... okay.
I just
like,
well, what is,
do you transform from like your vehicle into... Is that what...
You're all the time transforming from the Stealth Force combat mode into the whatever the hell the other one.
What were you talking about?
You don't
about?
Know about the SFCB? Or CM, I mean?
No, but what is that? Is that like when you're the vehicle?
No, technically three modes. There's your plane vehicle form where you basically just drive around. And then there's the Stealth Force combat mode, which is you're still in your vehicle form, but you have guns that come out like really heavy weapons. And
that's
then
not very stealthy.
And your wheels allow you to kind of strafe from side to side.
I think it's a figurative use of the word stealth. It's not really stealthy.
Okay.
No, you're right. It's not stealthy. I don't know why it's called that. I don't want to debate that either, because ask High Moon. Okay. And then the third mode, which is the robot form, where you have each character has different unique abilities that can only be used in robot form, and it's how you interact with objects in your environment as well. So I thought it was a lot of fun. I know some people were complaining
that
the
action game?
Yeah, it's like action adventure. I almost call it a brawler, button masher, but it's not really, because there's a lot of times where you have to really strategize between when you're going to be robot form and use your special abilities because they have a recharge time,
okay,
and then when you're going to be in your, you know, vehicle, you know, the combat mode where you're using your heavier guns and your stronger defenses. It's I'm really having a good time.
Did you play the previous one that High Moon did?
No, I did not actually.
I was just wondering what the difference is, because this one you were saying isn't getting as high review marks as
this. I know the previous game, War for Cybertron, did not have the new stealth mode.
Well,
stealth
War for Force. Cybertron was based on the Transformers homeworld. It was totally fictional. This is a movie. I mean, it's still movie based. It's a prequel.
But
it's still movie based.
Did the Transformers still look like they were built by dragging a magnet through a junkyard? Because they do not look like anything. I don't know what those things are.
So which ones do you get to play in the game?
You get to actually do, there's 7 chapters in the game. The first 3, I believe, are Autobot chapters, and then actually it switches in the campaign, and then you play as Decepticons.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is kind of interesting. At first, I was a little resistant because I'm a really big Autobot fan. I was like, I don't want to kill Autobots.
Have you seen her tattoo?
Whatever. And you get to play as Bumblebee, Ironhide, Optimus Prime, and then they have new Decepticons like Soundwave and Laserbeak, and of course, you know, Megatron and some other cool ones, Starscream. You get to do the flying. I like it.
All right.
It's fun. I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Weekend Confirmers, roll out. Autobots, roll out.
Don't roll out anywhere. We're only halfway through with this show. When we come back on the other side, we will have your feedback and some questions from Twitter for us to talk about. And then coming up in a little later on, we have Zav's new and improved Newsy News 2.0. So you don't want to miss that either. Stick around. We'll be back in a moment.
By popular demand, the Dear Story. Dear Jeff Kanata's dramatic reading.
The Dear Story.
Dear Story.
By popular demand.
The Dear Story.
With his head and antlers between my legs, I was in some pretty serious danger. Serious danger. Serious danger. And I told my kids, stay behind me! Serious danger. Serious danger. It had a wild, panicked look in its eyes. Serious danger. Serious danger. The deer charged me. Don't worry about me, kiss. Serious danger. Serious danger. My kids were frozen with fear. Dear. Serious danger. Serious danger. Dear. My sons, ages 5, 7, and 8. Serious danger. Serious danger. Had said something valiant. Stay behind me! And turned tail. He sprang up and started to circle me. Serious danger. Serious danger. Look, kids! I'm safe! That's pretty much it. The whole encounter probably lasted less than a minute, but it felt like a weird
storm.
All right, that's it with the reprises. Next week, Del Rio will be up with a new, fresh mix for that break. I'm sorry, I'm not going to be here to hear that.
Oh, that's right. Next week is your. Inmates run the asylum.
Inmates running the asylum.
Although maybe it'll actually be a civilized adult conversation.
When you come back, there's going to be a jar here. Every time you make a sexual innuendo, you have to put a dollar in it.
Jesus, I don't have that much money.
I know you don't.
I'll be out down on the street at like... Can you spare a dollar?
Maybe I'll pay for another hour in the studio.
Garnett would be like, I put my dollar in your jar. It's like...
Damn, the universe just unfolded on itself. Damn it.
Oh, jeez. You just created a paradox.
Yes! Yo, dog, what's up?
Oh,
jeez. So what do we got going on? Next week, you will be here, Jeff Kanata, and... you will be here, Zav D'Amatos,
mm-hmm.
and Danny will be here.
Yeah.
So the TRS twosome.
That's right.
At least. And we don't know who else is going to be with you right now. That's up to Dave to figure out. They'll really figure out something.
And should be fun regardless.
Yeah. Well, you guys have a blast.
Huh.
Be so fun. And you'll still be able to hear me sometime, maybe not next week, but while I'm away, I'll be on the Pixel Junk podcast.
Oh, cool.
Talking Pixel Junk things.
Yay, I love Pixel Junk.
I do too. And if you want to, I think they're going to do I think they're already doing a Q&A thing. So if you want to go to the Pixel Junk forums at q-games.com, you can hop into their forums. And you should already be listening to Pixel Junk Radio anyway, because it's 75% hilarious Japanese, we live in Kyoto fun in the first place, and then 25% pixel junk stuff.
There's only one question to ask pixel junk.
Would you, yeah, are you giving me one?
Yes.
Okay, what's that?
When is Monsters 2 coming out?
Before or after Dungeons, I guess, would be the answer. Actually, it's really funny because that thread just hit Gaff like 2 or 3 days ago. And it was so much fun. I always thought everyone loved Monsters. And there was like a whole bunch of back and forth of like, well, you know, I just want them to do something new. There's a lot of people who want them to do Dungeons, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then there was a lot of folks who were like, you know, they've done Shooter 2 and now they have Sidescroller coming. And I'd like to see them do something different and original. But yeah, man, it'd be hard to argue with Monsters, wouldn't it?
My favorite
hours,
game ever.
Hours of my life in Monsters. I've played those two maps in the Encore like countless times.
My favorite game is Eden, and
I love that. You know that's my fave.
Would love for them to have something in a similar vein of just an experience unlike anything I've ever had. Rather than doing their take on an experience that I'm familiar with, mm-hmm. I would much prefer them blowing my mind and going, oh my God.
I really liked Racers when they released that second lap update not too long ago.
That was a huge update.
Huge update. It's like a sequel, essentially. Great.
And by the way, if you haven't played Shooter 2 or if you got frustrated and set it down, they just put out a patch for Shooter 2 that adds the pause function to it so you can actually step away now and not lose your place. So because some of those levels get pretty heavy duty, especially some of the boss fights. So if you stepped away from it and didn't complete it, now's a good time to go back and get in some more Shooter 2. So yeah, I'm going to go over there. We're going to do that. It'll be a lot of fun. Always have a good time with those guys.
And I think it's on sale on PSN right now.
Is it?
Yeah, I think I saw that on the PlayStation blog.
Wow.
I will look it
up. Lots
of
sales going on right now.
Opportunity knocks. Will you answer? Like, you talk about time holes, just real quickly. I got Andrea hooked on the same thing that Russ Frustick from MTV got me hooked on, which is Tiny Tower for iPad and iPhone. Dear God, this game is addictive. And I don't usually get so hooked up on these iOS games, but this game is so crazy addictive. It's a simple tower build. You remember I was talking about Utes Tower, which, by the way, I was right. Was Utes Tower. I was right about something. I just like to say I was right about something.
Let's write down the time.
Soak it in,
on
buddy.
This day, the year of our Lord, 2011.
This game is not exactly like Utes Tower, though. It's very simplified, functional simulation of supply and demand. Of you're building a tower, you put citizens into it, and then there's five different types of consumption that they can desire: creative, retail, service, food. And what's the other one? Anyway, one other. And so you build out different floors that have those functions, and you staff them, and you create stuff in them, and people buy them. And it's just a churn, right? But there's something that's perfectly balanced about being able to pick the game up, play it for like 2 minutes. Like, oh, I'm going to have this floor build this. I'm going to have this floor build this. I'm going to have this floor build this. I need to get two more residents, so I'll bring them in, and then just put it down and come back to it like an hour later.
You know, Garnet, that sounds an awful lot like an economic Euro board game to me. Just saying.
Yeah, but I'm not bored. I'm enjoying this.
All right. Moving on.
What is the board game? What is the board game it reminds you of?
There's a whole class of them, and there's usually those economic style games where you have like worker placement games where you need to assign workers to different jobs.
Can we play one sometime?
Like the Civ World.
I will kill you. Oh, you've been playing. I'm so curious about this. I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to ask you.
What have you been playing?
Because
the
I love
Civ World
Civ.
Beta.
Oh, I've been playing it also. Well, I started it.
Jeff wanted to ask me something, not you.
It's true.
Turn my mic
I did
off.
Say that.
Can we do that?
Is it good? You like it?
Yeah, I'm really liking it. I know from some of the things I've heard from people so far is that like the hardcore Civilization fans are going to find it too casual, but it is a Facebook game, and Sid Meier's working really closely with 2K to make sure that, you know, it really represents his brand. Yeah, which is fantastic, and yeah. he's going in to the. From what I've heard, he's been monitoring the beta, and I really like it. I'm spending way more time on Facebook now because I'm playing that game.
So, what does the Facebook integration consist of? I mean, is it just Civ on Facebook, or is there more to it?
It's definitely not just Civ.
So that's a bad thing to me, but I'm curious. Maybe it's not.
Well, I really like that. I like the casual aspect of it, that there's these little mini games that you can do to kind of pass the time while you're like harvesting crops and stuff. And
so are you harvesting stuff in chunks of time?
Yes. I mean, I'm guessing there's going to be a microtransaction aspect to it once it goes live, where you can like skip that time by paying money to buy like harvests and things like that, which is what I'm guessing. But right now, because it's in the beta, like you're not like paying.
So it's basically Farmville.
No, it's not. The thing about it is so the harvest concept replaces what would have been the turns in traditional in a traditional playing. So the game's taking place in sort of quasi real time. So it's always has happening. So if you have farmers working,
so it's going to take me 200,000 years to finish.
No, condensed, obviously sped up time, but it's a constantly moving game, and your workers are always harvesting resources, but you have this ability to pop a, you know, press the harvest button and have them produce full quantity of whatever they're doing. So a farmer like will give you a full point towards your food to build up. Well, actually, I guess it's like multiple points depending on what they're working. So that's where like that's so all the sieve functions start to fall into place. So if you built a farm on fertile land and then have a granary, then a worker working that farm plot is going to produce plus whatever number it is. Maybe let's say he produces plus 10 food. Then when you click harvest, he's going to automatically gather those 10 right away, add them to your food count. While the game is ongoing, though, you'll see that every so often you get like a plus one food. So you're sort of getting some residual effect all the time. And then you can use the harvests to speed things along like you would with a full turn. The social part that you ask about is that you don't build an empire. Mm-hmm. The empires are the
collective
social
empires.
Exactly. So you
I just lost interest.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did.
Why? Okay. You don't like people, Jeff?
I think you pretty much summed it up.
But that's supposed to be the whole thing of it is that, you know, can't you tell? You run a city state.
Classic misanthrope. I get that. I like that, but I don't want to be dependent on other people. I don't like the whole commitment by association of I need to do something. You scratch my back, I'll scratch your back because this is a social game and I need to do that. And now it's not really a game I'm playing. It's more of a just.
But it is a social game.
Like, I haven't gotten into that so much. Like, I haven't seen where somebody has to come to my little village and do something in order for me to get somewhere yet.
Well, it's not so much that yet. In order for your civilization to advance, you're going to have to work together with other people. Like, you'll form an empire or you'll join an empire. So say you join the North American
Garnet
states.
Garnet and I are in the Arabian Empire.
Nice.
That's right. So say you join the Arabian Empire.
No, I want to join your empire.
See? So already the collective pull is like pulling on you.
How much
you.
Do I have to pay? I'll do it. Take my credit card.
And then you'll hop into your empire's chat, and then that's where you guys will decide, well, are we gearing up for population? Are we going for civics? Are we going for tech?
Somebody makes that decision, or it's a collective decision.
It's a you're all in the chat, and you have to decide like what are we trying to do. And if you work together with the other city states, then obviously your civilization is going to be more productive.
So somebody sends around sort of a vote.
There's a chat box a chat window.
If I'm not online at that moment,
well, you can't play if you're not online.
I have to always.
Is this
be
before
online.
Or after?
You have to be logged into Facebook to play.
Is this before or after I untag all the photos of me super drunk on Facebook?
That's part of our civilization's app.
Yeah.
Part of our civilization has been built on a foundation of laughing at your drunk pictures.
My drunk pictures, yeah.
Our whole technology system is based on that. Our farming.
My problem with the game is that the interface is kludgy and it's not a very pretty game and you can't take it full screen.
Yeah, that's a problem.
So you're playing in this little windowed box and the interface is filled with like all kinds of buttons for this and buttons for that. And I think that right now is an impediment to some of the good ideas, such as the social idea of, you know, like look, that's way more social than saying I'm going to start a train and then I'm going to post it to my wall that Garnet's train has pulled into your town. Do you want to buy some supplies?
So is the game finite then? It's a session that starts.
Yes, it is.
Online.
Yes, it does have
an end goal. Winnable.
So
you can win this fucking game.
So I do have to be online for the duration of the game.
Yes, I believe so.
No, you're not going to be online for the entire duration of the game. The game is going to last several days, right? So each era is winnable based off of, and I haven't read enough of, there's a great, by the way, if you get into the game, at the top of the border of your game play area is a link to the Civ Wiki. And if you go to the Wiki, you can pick up a lot of information on how to play the game, which will be critically important because the tutorial will walk you through how to use the game interface.
Yeah.
But it won't really do a good job of explaining to you what the fuck you're doing and why you're doing it.
It's a beta.
Well, I mean, but like,
and it's a big civ building game. Yeah. I mean, you kind of have to. You have to kind of want to learn how to play it to learn how to play
Are you playing against AI? Or are you playing against humans?
Just humans, as far
playing
as I
all
know.
All the humans.
See, now that could. Now I'm back to maybe wanting to play it because it could seem like just a really fun multiplayer version of Civ.
It is. It's a very cool idea. I mean, it's not exactly, you know, it's not exactly the battle arena thing, but it's still. Yeah.
It seems very heavily inspired by it seems inspired by Civ Rev.
You think so?
Yeah.
See, because Civ Rev,
the art
is still...
style is sort of in that vein, yeah. And then like sort of just the mechanics are a little bit sort of.
It's not a bad thing.
No, it's not. I mean that Civ Rev. I mean was a very, I don't say very, but it was a streamlined version of what Civilization was to make it work on a console. This is sort of that pared down to Facebook.
I think they're really just trying to take a game, you know, that comes from, you know, real-time strategy background and make it a broad appeal game to kind of hook people who are into Facebook games to be like, hey, this is going to be like the next generation of Facebook games. I think as far as Facebook games go, I said this in a story that I did earlier today that I do not play Facebook games at all. Like all requests just get ignored. I like, never game
on
Facebook. But I really like this game. I've had a lot of fun with it so far.
The people on your friends list that do play Facebook games, would they play Civ World though, or would they play Farmville? That's something a little bit more simplistic.
You know, that's a great question. I don't know. It is definitely much more complicated than your run-of-the-mill Facebook game. Mm-hmm. And you have to be prepared to commit some time, even though, like, your village keeps moving even when you're not there. You know, when you come back, like...
Where'd my village go?
I moved.
Damn it!
See, it doesn't seem like, you know, Infamous, there's a Facebook game for Infamous, which those games seem more like advert gaming. You know, they're trying to promote the franchise so you can go out and buy the PS3 game. This doesn't seem like
this anyone. This is definitely a standalone, for sure.
Anyone tried the Dragon Age game?
No.
Because Facebook?
I keep getting emails. What?
She said, fuck no.
Exactly.
So, you know, well, she doesn't play Facebook games.
Of course not.
They're stupid.
Of course not. And
I think we should get to some music. We always give short shrift to the feedback. You always do all these feedback, and then we have like two in the
show.
Yeah,
I know.
Yes. And if we have time, I won't talk about this.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you brought your PowerPoint.
In slide one
of the essential facts from the ESA, you can see in this pie chart.
No lie, there is a pie chart.
I'm going to punch you later, just so the listeners know.
Captain Box a couple of weeks ago threw this question to us, and I thought that was kind of interesting because it touches on a number of games that have been around and have gotten a lot of attention lately. He says, I enjoyed playing Torchlight, but never as much as I enjoyed playing Diablo 2. Similarly, I enjoyed playing Darksiders, but never as much as I enjoyed Wind Waker, the last innovative Zelda game. Do we only like these games, and he's referring to Torchlight and Darksiders, because they're close to the games we'd actually like to be playing?
That's an interesting question. I know, Jeff, you said not too long ago that you preferred Darksiders. I don't know why you're smiling.
Yeah, I feel like you're pulling me into a trap.
No.
It's a trap!
I didn't.
That was a horrible Akbar.
Yeah. You knew what I was doing, so not horrible.
It's a meme.
This is very true.
QED. I would say that I don't agree with the statement.
Okay.
I don't agree that I'm enjoying it just because it harkens to something I do like. I like this style of gameplay, and just because Diablo sort of invented that style of gameplay and Zelda invented that style of gameplay, that's the touchstone that I go back to and say, well, I like that type of game. But if a game does it well, I'm having an enjoyable play experience, not just because I'm constantly thinking of that other game.
Right.
It's because that game is providing me an enjoyable experience.
The thing that immediately comes to mind for me is, you know, people always compare the camera system Resident Evil 4 to, you know, Gears of War picked up that throne.
Yeah.
And then after that, there were a bunch of games that went after what Gears of War did, and Vanquish was a game that came out recently that sort of has the same thing.
A million games.
I like those
actually.
Games for those games. I mean, they might have similar mechanics behind them that are inspired by them. By, you know, previous titles, but I don't really think that's why I get pulled into them. What I do like is when you see a game like Gears of War that takes that idea, that inspiration, and then does something new with it. You know, I think Vanquish did that a lot. Like the whole sliding around the arena, that stuff was really cool.
Yeah.
And it took a core idea that maybe it extracted from another experience and did something new with it, which I think is what Darksiders might have done
really
well. Because it combined a lot of elements from other games that you really liked.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think it took the sort of fight mechanic from something along the lines of a God of War and threw it into a Zelda game. And that, I think that made for a delicious Oreo cookie of yum. But I don't. I think Torchlight also brings, you know, the whole pet mechanic, all that stuff. I think is useful and interesting addition to what is, you know, ostensibly Diablo. But I can enjoy those games in their own right. Not. Yes, they harken back to those experiences I enjoy, but it's the experience that I enjoy, and it's not. I don't really even understand the question, to be honest, because it's like, does he say that he's just sitting there thinking about the other game the whole time?
I think his point is that you're playing these games because the game you wanted to play
isn't out.
And in a case, for instance, of a Diablo, the sequel has taken, you know, a forever to have come into existence. Like, it's like,
I'll say this. If Diablo 3 and Torchlight 2 came out on the same day, I'm playing Diablo 3.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. I'm also saying if HD Zelda and Darksiders 2 comes out on the same day, I'm playing both those games for sure. But I'm probably playing Zelda first.
I'm still paused on your Diablo thing because I'm a huge, like, Diablo 2 stands in my top 5 games of all times. Mm-hmm. I played the game so many times, it's ludicrous to even think about how many times I played the game. And yet, that having been said, from what you just said, I literally paused to think, if Torchlight 2 and Diablo 3 came out at the exact same time, which would I play? And I think that's partly a testament to how much I've enjoyed playing Torchlight.
Yeah, that's not to take anything away from Torchlight, for sure.
It's how relevant it's become to me. So I think that, for me, first of all, I think Captain Box's question to answer your question, like, what is his question, is do we only like those games as a function of how they harken back to
how they fill a void, right? Yeah,
right. And I would say that's entirely dependent on the game
and the genre of the game. I would say specifically there are certain genres that kind of lend themselves more to, like, copycats than mm-hmm. others. I mean, look at the first-person shooter genre. Like, how many games look almost identical there? Are you going to say that because you liked a certain Call of Duty that you're just playing Battlefield because you wish you were playing Call of Duty? It's just a silly argument.
Know EA wishes that was the case.
And, you know, I mean, well, people are going to get mad at me anyway, so I might as well throw another log on the fire. I think that certainly you could make that argument for the most recent Medal of Honor entry. You know, that it was filling a number of there's not this shooter out here right now. We know people love this universe.
Really?
Not, you know,
I don't think there's a void when a game comes out every year. There's no void.
Well, Medal of Honor, no.
And the space that it came out in, though, there hadn't been one in 3 months.
And it came out, like a few weeks before.
Hey, that's all it needed. All it needed was a few weeks, and it sold 2 million copies.
Medal of Honor? No. Medal of Honor sold 5.
Okay, so it sold
over,
5 million.
Yeah.
Over a period of time.
My Battlefield comment was to the fact that EA wants it to sell as much as Call of Duty, not to people to mistake that. But I think what it sounds like it comes down to the person. Maybe some people have a hierarchy of franchises, mm-hmm. and they like, you know, I like RPGs, so I only play Final Fantasy. Anything else is cake. Anything else is bonus.
You're talking about Andrea right now.
You know,
hey,
I like
RPGs.
I like first person shooters, but Halo is number one for me. So everything other than Halo is just, you know, a walk in the park until I can play another Halo. Maybe people do have that hierarchy in their head, and which is what it sounds like this person has.
So if you're thinking about a hierarchy, here's a little interjection from Jay Ree, who says, I may be mistaken, but the people who still find Ocarina of Time the best game of all best games seem to typically be those who played it in the 90s when it was originally released and haven't gotten over the experience. I found its mechanics antiquated, and I got bored pretty soon after Link time traveled for the first time. Is Ocarina of Time the Citizen Kane of video games? Is it something that should be appreciated for what it accomplished back in its time and that can be studied as a profound step in video game development, while at the same time admitting that it doesn't really compare well to those amazing games of this generation?
Yes.
Okay, but you better back that up, because Plan B is not happy with Plan A right now. Plan B is like, that bitch!
I don't know. I don't know if he would say that. I'm not going to attribute that to Billy.
Yeah, I know.
I think
that is not a direct quote.
Gentleman,
I think
scholar.
That I think he put it
wears
very.
Wears a hard shoe and a nice slack. Okay?
I think he said it very eloquently that, like, it should definitely be heralded for what it was. But if you were to give that game to, like, a 13-year-old today,
I think that's exactly what Nintendo's doing.
You know what
actually.
I mean? No, but not the same game. It's a different game. It's, like, updated. You know what I mean? It's not like this. It's not the
it's
same.
Got three Dizzles, but other than
it's
that,
it's not the same experience on the same platform. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's what he's saying, isn't he? or am I, did I understand that wrong?
I think he played, I think he's in reference to the new version that just came out. That's basically the same.
Right, clear, but like, but Ocarina of Time on the 3DS today is not the way it was in the 90s. You know
right,
what
that's
I mean?
True.
It's two different games.
Pretty close.
Well, it also includes Master Quest and includes other bonuses, and it's updated.
Hold on.
Before you guys unwind too much for here, he specifically pointed to the mechanics of the game,
which is the part that's not changed.
That part is okay. You know, respective of what the visual looks like or the medium is being presented in, the mechanic is still a mechanic. So. Is it only something that was a function of its time, or is it still timely?
But this is a person who clearly says that they were bored by it, and he's wondering, why do people love this game? Because I was bored by it. It just goes to prove the fact that it's completely opinion-based.
Yeah.
It may not be that, you know, Billy loves the game from, and he loves it only because he remembered loving it before. Maybe he still enjoys those mechanics. You know, I had never played it originally, and I played it on the 3DS, and I thought it was a good game.
Yeah, I was struck by how well it holds up. It feels very contemporary, but clearly I'm not alone. I mean, I'm
glad that Garnet like pulled back and was like speaking specifically about the mechanics. Like, if we're just talking about like how the game plays, then yeah, definitely. There's a lot of games like that now, aren't there? There's
so let me throw another card at you then. Ryan Archer 95 on Twitter asked us, do you think that graphics should be considered when reviewing an older game? And therefore, do older reviews on games even matter?
No, clearly they don't matter. Why would reviews on older games matter?
Why would an old review on an older game matter?
Review on an old game or an old review on an old game?
An old review on an old game.
2+1+2+1.
Wait, what was the question?
Do you think that graphics should be considered when reviewing an older game? And therefore, do older reviews on games matter? So do you think that talking about graphics now matters, number one? And if it does or doesn't, do you think that a person's opinion on the graphics of 10 years ago in their review would matter?
The only time graphics ever matter to me is like when I'm playing a game like Uncharted 2, there's that part where you scale the building and you see the vista. Things like that.
I think the point that he's trying to make.
I'm trying to circle to it myself. For me personally, it's not about, and the way that we review things, we don't review things based on those elements. We review it based on that experience.
Right.
And the experience is dependent on the delivery of the experience.
So I think the point he's trying to get to is that a lot of video game reviews, especially those of prior eras, were very into talking about how great the visual medium looked. And how great the visual medium looked the first time you saw something on a 3DFX card would be ghastly, maybe, compared to what you look at now. It's just like, oh my God.
Yeah, but there was such a gigantic jump in graphics when, you know, through the progression of the hardware of video games. I mean, I remember the first time I saw a 64-bit game, I was like blown away. I was like, oh my God, this is ridiculous, amazing awesomeness. And now, like, a lot of those games, you put them next to, you know, some of these gorgeous 3D games. Like, if you look at Crysis 2 on like a PC after the patch, like, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful game. But you put that next to some of the older 64-bit games and you're like, oh, that's dog food.
Also, look at how games are marketed now. I mean, now there is not as much an emphasis on look how amazing these graphics are versus people talking about this is the story that's in the game or these are the modes that are in the game, the multiplayer stuff. I don't really think that they focus on it because we have been, you know, as Andrew said, we've advanced so far now that, you know, it's not Mario 2D going to 3D and everyone's like, oh my God, how did you do it? Now it's just looking slightly better than it did before because the tech has advanced so high.
I disagree with you guys. I think it all plays in, and it all plays a very important part. I think the discussion.
I think it does too.
I think the discussion can be less about the sort of technical merits of what is accomplished, whereas in previous generations it was more about a technical ability to manipulate the hardware or you know write better code, and now it's more about how is that experience delivered. And I think that graphics, for lack of a better word, make a very big part of that. Mm-hmm. And I do like verisimilitude. I do like believing in the world that I'm in. And that doesn't necessarily mean it needs to push more polygons than something else. It needs to deliver that experience in a way that draws me in. And that can be done in an 8-bit, you know, it can be Sword and Sorcery, which drew me in because of how it looked and how it delivered that experience. And it can be Crysis 2.
But is that graphics or presentation?
I think it's potato potato. You know, right. I mean, I think you're talking about the same kind of thing. And if an older game's presentation gets to me, which oftentimes it does because it feels dated, mm-hmm. then that's going to play into a potential review I might give of an old game. I have a hard time going back and playing older games that feel dated, and some older games don't. I can play, you know, Super Mario World until the cows come home. I can play
and
Tetris.
Some games escape it by virtue of how much they captivate you by what you're doing and playing in the game to where
Certainly.
You're not worried about what they look like.
Certainly.
And I could get into a whole discussion. There's a whole other discussion here about retro gaming and whether or not you should play retro games as they were originally designed, or do we want them all upgraded and updated into like modern polygons and fancy texture maps. You know, I appreciate what Halo is doing. Mm-hmm. I think that it fits very well for Halo, but there are a number of games that I think you'd be much better served to play in their original, you know, in their original state. But then people are like, oh, I got to drag out the old machine, or it doesn't look good on a modern television. And, you know, just
if Halo had never been made and was being made today,
yes.
it would look like what they're making now. It wouldn't look like what it
oh,
did
well, of
look
course
like.
Not.
So
of
to,
course
to
not.
Argue that that was how well, it should be played. And I think there are certain games that that is not the case. You know, that is not the case. That there are certain games that if it was made now, with today's technology, it wouldn't look that much different. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. Halo is a very good example because it is the original game's engine that's powering that. And the reason why they do that is because that game performs vastly different from any other Halo game did. Mm. The physics engine was completely different. The mechanics behind it were very different. The guns felt different. And you're right. I mean, the game's coming out now, so it looks a certain way. But it has that old engine, so it is the gameplay experience. I think maybe we're just getting a little confused on the semantics of it.
You know what? We have a number of old game fans and classic game fans on Shaq News, so let's do this. Get into the comments on this show. Tell us your side of how much graphics matter, how much you get pulled into the game, whether or not you want them updated, and how much all of it is relevant if you look back at you know, critiquing a game of past, and we'll come back to it next week.
Sounds good.
I won't be here, but you guys can come back to next week and you'll have a civilized adult conversation about it. How awesome is that? When we come back on the other side, I am going to actually start Zav's news piece because we have one important piece here that I want to make sure that we talk about. You know what that is, right? Right, Zav? You remember?
What?
Remember? The one other part that I wanted to make sure that we talked about?
Oh, the other part? Yeah, of course the other part. I always remember the other parts.
Operation Rainfall.
Oh, yes, of course.
All right, so we'll do all that when we come back on the other side. Right now, this is Del Rio featuring Mr. Perkins with What I Used to Be. I used to be the shy guy running in the rain in the great northwest trying to find my lane. Then I got on the stage, all the crowd insane. And this hot little mama asked me my name. I knew right then I'd never be the same. Once I got off the bench, started running the game. Now everybody want to be on my team. And the haters all mad because I'm living my dream. No, this ain't what I used to be. I used to be a Southside player on the scene, pretty smile, had the girls going wild in their dreams, and the gunshots bang in the parking lot. I'm in the shot, gotta move to the A and rock, but then they still wanna steal my appeal and such. I get the NY, keep it hella real, but what? I'm in LA doing what I'm really supposed to do. Drop the top, little mama, can I holler at you? Ladies, see these ain't the players you used to see. Ain't a cat in here can stand next to me. I won't be afraid, I won't let you down, but don't play around, no. And I ain't talking cash, maybe talking fast, but baby Perkins got flow. This ain't what I used to be, and this ain't my destiny, and this ain't what I call free. They just said my style was a mile away, so I never really thought I'd ever see the day. When they try to take my words and offer me no pay, and I'm supposed to sit back like it's okay. Not this time. You better pay up if you want these rhymes. Perks and I, yeah, we got flow, so sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. No, this ain't what I used to be, and this ain't my destiny, and this ain't what I call free. Get a little
that's how I'm living. I'm not the same that I was in the beginning. I'm still working hard, hardly just chilling. And all I rock in the MIC, just straight killing. Every little hater that steps into my area, if you're not ready, I'm just going to bury ya. Enough of this, just run away, cause we got a couple ladies ready to play.
I say, ladies, see, these ain't the players you used to see. Ain't a cat in here can stand next to me. I won't be afraid, I won't let you down. I don't play around. I ain't talking cash, I may be talking fast, but the real guy, no. This ain't what I used to be, and this ain't my destiny, and this ain't what I call free. I'm not what I used to be.
Got to
What I Used to Be by Del Rio.
Nice.
Our very Del Rio. Dave, is that up on the iTunes yet? So this is an exclusive off the new joint that's coming out when? It's coming out in September. So there you go. You get to hear it here ahead of time on the Big Weekend Confirmed show. It's Del Rio featuring Mr. Perkins. First exclusive track. Dude, that's we're dropping exclusives. W's. W's right here, baby. We got our own W's. Let's talk really quickly about Operation Rainfall. And last week, we had a poster who I'm not even going to vindicate by providing their name, but the subject was a good subject. Last year, we had a full show last week. We had like 2 hours and 12 minutes. This is an interesting topic, though, because it also goes together with some of the Wii U stuff. So Operation Rainfall was a grassroots movement by fans to bring three role-playing games that are being published by Nintendo in Japan to North America. Those are The Last Story, Xenoblade Chronicles, and Pandora's Tower. And ironically, the first two of those are actually already being localized for Europe. They're simply not being brought to North America. And I don't even understand where Nintendo is coming from this. And part of the reason that, you know, I said in my comments last week that we didn't get into this was that after all the effort that's gone into this, the way the situation has gone down, I just don't know what else there is, honestly, for us to do beyond saying, I don't get it. It's a bad deal and it doesn't make any sense. Nintendo heard the grassroots movement, which was fairly strong. Among other things, they were able to get Xenoblade Chronicles up to the number one pre-order spot on Amazon.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's no fooling around here. They had a tremendous internet show of strength for getting these things to happen. Nintendo's response ultimately on their Facebook page was this: thank you for your enthusiasm. We promised an update, so here it is. We never say never. We can confirm that there are no plans to bring these three games to the Americas at this time. Thanks so much for your passion and for being such great fans.
Did they also post a picture of Mario flipping the bird?
I mean, what I don't get here is where on earth, like, maybe I do get it. I think the part of the problem here is that Nintendo is at a philosophical crossroads, and I'm not sure that they've really even determined where the heck they're going. They have a very strong family reputation, which they don't want to jeopardize. Mm-hmm. They have a core of very strong fans that they obviously have always enjoyed having, but they don't seem to spend much time anymore taking that good a care of them. I mean,
I'm putting out a whole console.
Well, I mean,
are they?
Kind of.
Are they? So this leads me to a question.
I agree with you.
Who is the Wii U going to go to then?
I think they're hoping that it's us.
Maybe the hardcore they're looking for isn't necessarily their old fan. This could be really concerning. I mean, if they're saying right here to the fans, hey, you know what? We know you're our best fans. We know you really want this stuff because you wrote in. But, we don't really care.
You know what's really weird about Nintendo is, like, they'll have a huge press conference and focus on things like the vitality sensor a couple years ago. And then they'll have those roundtable interviews and they'll be like they did this year where they said, oh, by the way, Pikmin's coming out on the Wii U. Like, they do that a lot where it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, guys that really care about it, these are the things that you want, and we are doing it, but, you know, forget about it. We're not going to give you any details. This is just another thing. Do you think they're already starting to slow the train on the Wii because they're really focusing on the Wii U coming out next year?
I don't think so.
For their core games market, they are. I mean, can you name the last big Wii title?
That's
the
whole point that Operation Rainfall made. Their whole point is you've got these games that core gamers who you sit there and say you want to try and bring back into the fold. Like, we're your vanguard. Like, these guys right here have always been the vanguard of the Nintendo core audience. And Nintendo is basically saying right before a new machine comes out, yeah, guys, you know what? Screw you guys.
Well, I think that, unfortunately, and it's unfortunate that this is the decision that was made, but I think it probably comes down to somebody in an office who, regardless of whatever show of internet strength Operation Rainfall has presented, has a calculation that says X dollars will go into bringing them over here,
absolutely.
And Y dollars is what we expect to make, and those do not match up, and therefore we're not bringing them here.
There was already an article on another blog that said, you know, hey, it's probably good business for them. While a few thousand core fans may have said that they're interested in this, they don't feel that they'd be marketable. They're obviously hardcore Japanese role playing games,
and these are Nintendo published titles in those regions.
In Japan, they are Nintendo published in Japan, and the first two Last Stories and Xenoblade Chronicles are going to be Nintendo published in Europe.
The sad thing that has come to light in a number of media types, films, lots of, you know, stuff like Snakes on a Plane and Scott Pilgrim, is that there can be a lot of Sturm und Drang on the internet, drummed up by very passionate people that can seem like a really big deal. But when these international properties, when these big conglomerates that are interested in making money find out that all of that passion doesn't really add up to dollars, they stop caring about the passion.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. As somebody who's passionate about a lot of things, it's unfortunate, but that seems to be what people are drawing. I mean, we're looking at coming into Comic-Con very soon, and a lot of these companies are pulling out of Comic-Con because of all of these big properties that made a big splash at Comic-Con, and they thought, oh my God, Kick-Ass is another film.
Yep.
That they thought, oh, coming out of Comic-Con, we are going to have a hit on our hands. This is our audience. These are the tastemakers. These are the people that are going to come and proselytize for us.
And it wasn't sufficient.
And it doesn't mean anything, really.
It's sad. Bombed.
Yeah, all the movies that I just mentioned. And that's unfortunate because, you know, they are speaking to this audience. But unfortunately, our voice is loud on the internet, but it's not loud in the pocketbooks of these big corporations.
Which just goes back to what I was talking about where are Nintendo's intentions with what they're doing with Wii U, who is the audience they're going after, and how are they going to go after them? They've just talked recently about what their online approach is going to be, which Zav has coming up. You have that story, right? We're going to talk about that?
No.
Oh, you didn't have that? I thought you had that. I thought you told me before the show that we were going to do that one.
No. We're talking about something else.
All right. So Reggie talked a little bit about what the online plan for the Wii U would be. And although he spoke about it in fairly broad terms, it sounds essentially that they're going to provide a framework for online interoperability amongst people who are signed with Wii Us, but then publishers will be able to run their own networks.
Yeah.
So
the whole point of the story was that the publishers themselves and the developers are going to be – they're going to create a structure for them, and then those publishers and developers are going to create the environments in which people are going to explore. I mean, it is going to be sort of like the situation that you see EA has with Xbox Live and PSN. They run their own servers. It's going to be up to the publishers and developers, which I think a lot of people might be a little disappointed with, because if you look at a situation like EA – who regularly every year will shut down a few old games, online services for their old games, putting the control in their hands sometimes means that if a game's not successful, then that means those services will be turned off.
Well, how are the graphics on those old games?
Look at the Metal Gear Online, for example.
Yeah,
about a
Konami
year and a half
system.
After that game came out on the PS2, that was turned off by Konami. I think the online stuff for the PSP game that just came out, Peace Walker, I think has been turned off.
Is that a bad thing? I don't think it's a bad thing that some games get turned off. I think there's so many new games coming out all the time, and there's so many good games now from even like independent publishers.
Well, there's some people that just got really pissed off at you.
That's fine. They can get pissed off if they want, but I am the person who likes to try a bunch of different games. Would I like to go back to a game? Yes, but do you need to have online access to it? I don't think so.
Well, it just kind of promotes the disposability of these properties. If you're always being pushed forward to buy the next new thing, and it devalues the thing you're buying
now.
Right?
No, I disagree. I don't think it devalues the property. I don't think that because I can't play certain games online anymore doesn't mean that they're less of a game, that I like them any less, that I spent any less money
on
it. If it's strictly only online?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't think we were making that exclusion.
I think what it does is it only strives to prove that publishers really care about hit makers. Like, let's not create this brand new experience because it might not sell, because then we might have to turn off these services or whatever. And this goes back to this Nintendo situation where the only way that those three games will probably come out in North America is if another publisher picks them up, because Nintendo historically in this region focuses on releasing their hit maker games, their king makers. You know, you have the Mario and Metroid and those titles. They have a sort of a built-up audience, obviously, in the regions that they are coming out in. But in North America, I don't think they've ever published, especially on the Wii, a game of that caliber here. I may be wrong, but I think that they focus typically on their major franchises.
They do tend to focus on franchises. I'll just say this about this. The thing that over these couple of situations has come to mind for me is that Nintendo really needs to make some commitment to what the heck it is they want to do. If they want to play, if they want to bring core gamers back, and their concept of core is all the folks playing Call of Duty, then they can't just say, well, I'm going to turn online over to publishers. They need to provide a service on par with PlayStation Network, on par with Xbox Live, because that's the customer expectation. That's what the marketer term guy, I guess, is like Joe Sixpack. That's what Joe Sixpack expects when they go home and play Call of Duty. They expect to pop it on, log in, hop into the game, play the system. They don't expect to go through another company system. They need that quality level, and Nintendo needs to be able to ensure that. But Nintendo worries about things like that when it comes to the exposure of personal communications. Remember when Wii Speak came out? Right. One of their big arguments was, well, we don't want people having private personal conversations because we don't know what kind of terrible things people might say. And that speaks to the old family orientation of Nintendo. Nintendo's always been very family friendly, so they don't want to lose that. And then they've got the core group of Nintendo players, those people who love Nintendo games, the very people who are right here in Operation Rainfall, and Nintendo just turned their back on them. They have to decide which way do they want to go, who do they want to be, how do they want to, what's next? Where are they going? They can't just have a foot in everything. And the casuals could care less. The people who bought Wii's to play Wii Sports, they have no loyalty to Nintendo. Mm-mm. They just know that's their Wii Sports machine. So, I don't even know what Nintendo would do to court that market. That was long-winded, but it's just it's sort of fragmented to me.
Have they spoken of any standards whatsoever that are from game to game that they are enforcing?
No, I mean, we can make some assumptions. I mean, I would expect that they will provide some sort of, framework, persistent. I mean, there has to be some sort of persistent persona.
Is going to be a persistent persona. It's not going to be friend codes, from what I remember at E3. They said that structure, that gate is going to be controlled by Nintendo. But once you get inside of it, everything that populates within that world is going to be created by each developer and publisher who controls those networks within it.
Do you think that's them just putting the cost onto the publishers and the developers instead of them wanting to have to maintain that kind of gigantic global online service?
It's certainly a part of it.
That's part what Sony
of
it, does.
Probably.
It's certainly a part of it.
Yeah.
But I think that's silly to let that experience out of their hands, because one thing Nintendo has always been good at is giving you a great at the controller experience. It was always with their games. They really need to find a way to do that as well in the online space, I think. Successful.
I have a big uh-oh feeling for this whole generation of Nintendo, but I hope I'm wrong.
Davison, you remember Davison was really down on the U. I think the U is an interesting piece of tech, and a lot of cool things could be done with it.
I don't understand why as much as I am hardcore, quote-unquote, and like games that have come out for me, I don't understand why Nintendo feels the need to chase that market. They invented a new market. They mined gold where nobody else was mining it, and there was a lot of gold there. And I don't understand them running back to the shelter of something that might not
have
as much
gold. I think the reason I see it as fragmented is that I don't think they're running back to that. I think that their idea is that we keep everything we've got and we go back and pick some of these guys up and have them too. Maybe. And I don't think they can. I don't think they have shown me yet that they know how to manage that, how to wrangle that big group into one. It just gets messy for them. It's the same reason that going the other direction, that, you know, like Microsoft dabbling with casual stuff gets there to a degree, but then they have to build Kinect to build themselves basically a separate platform to try and entice that market. There's certainly a big difference for the time being between like what a 360 with a Kinect hooked up is to some people and versus what a 360 is to some people.
That's very true.
Yeah. One's a Gears machine and one is a, you know, Kinect Adventures machine.
Well, the possibilities are certainly different. That's true.
Yeah. And on that note, and by the way, if you want to know more about Operation Rainfall, it is it's oprainfall.blogspot.com. But unfortunately, it seems like the matter is more or less cold at least at this point.
I think what now they need to do is maybe try to drum up some support to get another publisher to pick it up.
Possibility. I mean, I certainly, you know, I would say that's funny. I hadn't thought about this, but I think that probably the most fun I had playing a game on my Wii was Little King Story.
Really?
Awesome game.
Those titles seem like, you know, properties that Ignition would pick up, which they've done and published games in North America that hadn't been picked up elsewhere as well.
Yeah, the video that I watched for Xenoblade Chronicles looked really good.
Yeah. Hey, let's move on to some news.
Let's move on to some news before
we get kicked out of here. There were two new game announcements today. Burnout Crash was announced today by EA and Criterion Games, an XBLA and PSN title coming
out. Sweet, a new Burnout game.
Fallout. And you know
so
what?
Excited.
What do you love about Fallout?
Fallout?
How it looks so amazing.
Burnout? I got so disappointed. I was so excited when I first heard about this because Burnout is one of my favorite series, particularly Burnout Revenge was my favorite of the series. And I got super, super
you love
excited.
Dishes
and
then that are served cold.
I saw the screenshots.
So the screenshots look like a top-down, almost original Grand Theft Auto style of an intersection. Kind of looks like an iOS game that there's a game where you have to worry about traffic lights. And they're saying it's going back to crash mode, which is what people loved about Burnout, which is very true. Except what people also love about Burnout is that, you know, the cars were, you know, things that you
were in. That it looked fucking awesome when you blew shit up.
Yeah, and it looked really awesome. This doesn't look very awesome.
Yeah.
But it's also seems like a side project, maybe?
Yeah.
Well, it's a downloadable title.
It's an XBLA PSN title coming out this fall.
Yeah.
The other big announcement was Arkane, of course, the developers behind Dark Messiah of Might and Magic, working on a new game with Bethesda, their parent company, ZeniMax.
We have a gift for you, listeners.
Oh, we do have a gift for you.
We have a gift for you.
So the game is called Dishonored, and they came with a choice paragraph in a press release that we're going to get Mr. Jeff Cannata to read for us here live.
Hand it over.
And on Week in Confirmed.
Cold reading.
Right. In the theatrical voice.
All right. Yes.
Right
please.
Here.
Dishonored is the antithesis of an edge of your seat roller coaster ride. It's a game about assassination where you don't have to kill anyone. It's a game about infiltration where you can set up traps and slaughter the entire garrison of an aristocrat's mansion rather than sneak in. It's a game about brutal violence, where you can slip in and out of a fortified barracks with nobody ever knowing you were there. It's a game about mortality and player choice, where the world you create is based on your actions, not navigating conversation trees.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen.
Contradictions are awesome. Dramatic contradictions.
So, it's a assassination game where you never have to kill anyone, ladies and
awesome.
Gentlemen.
Awesome.
First person, it's a first person stealth action game, which.
We think. Maybe it's not.
No, they said it's a first person stealth
action
game. No, maybe
it's not. It's all about contradictions.
Okay.
I read that. It's all about contradictions. It could actually be
a
real-time
first person
game
in third person.
Who knows?
It's a stealth game where you use a rocket launcher.
I like how they're like brutal violence, so you don't have to sneak in.
Yeah. It's so bizarre. Like that whole Arkane is funny because they're quite creative, but they also think themselves quite creative. So you get some like
Arx Fatalis is an awesome game.
You get some foolery like that.
They're behind that too. So this is what we're going to do with regular news. We're going to try something a little different. Rather than us, the joke that I always tell Garnet when I used to work at GamePro was that I love writing news in a magazine because I like reading news a month late. Rather than us tell you the news that's already happened this week, we do have a little discussion about what's actually happened in the news. So we're going to start with Split Second. The developer BlackRock, who created Split Second and Pure, has now been fizzled out of existence by Disney Interactive Studios. And they said, two anonymous members told Develop that it was planned from the beginning that this studio was going to be dissolved after a while because Disney had changed its direction to focus more on social gaming. And Pure and Split Second, both of those games didn't perform as well as they did. Remember, Split Second came out at the same time as Blur.
Which really cannibalized each other and wound up killing both those studios.
Both are great games.
Both of those studios are now gone.
It's a horrible outcome.
Right. So they basically said that at what point BlackRock had another pitch to tell Disney what their next title was going to be. And they said no matter what they were to have announced or shown off at that meeting, they were going to be rejected, which would lead to the studio being developed.
Feel free to put together a presentation. But just so you know going in, whatever you say is going to be rejected. But wow us.
So here's the discussion behind this story then.
Well, I think they started to feel that frustration based off the fact that along with they had a sequel working to Split Second, which based off the critical reception, people would have been, you would have thought, oh, that's a no-brainer. That got canceled late last year.
Yeah.
And yeah, reportedly a Pure sequel was in development and canceled. Then BlackRock went ahead, like you said, to do Split Second. There was also a sort of, what was the other game that they were going to create? Like a League of Legends type game that apparently they were pitching that
supposedly looked really pretty cool as it was coming along. That they were shocked that Disney wasn't interested in because it seemed to fit in, you know, like superhero-y and like really sort of fit with that sort of thing. Go ahead. And so you... Right. To me, the thing is, you have to get inside a publisher's head because Disney seems very dogmatic about their approach now to changing who they are.
And this goes to the discussion for the story. So Disney has acquired something of a touch of death for some developers. Propaganda Games was a company that lost over 100 developers in their studio. Junction Point lost people after Epic Mickey came out. Of course, there's BlackRock. Does this signal poor business, bad marketing, or is it proof that the industry is fueled by only known quantities? These are all three studios that focus on creating new titles for this generation that have now been pared down or completely shut down after trying to do something new in this generation. Is Disney focused on only creating known quantities?
Well, I don't think it's just Disney. I think it speaks kind of to like this kind of movement that's happening at large with commercialism, especially in the States, where if you don't perform, you know, the plug gets pulled. It's really kind of tragic because I think it kills small businesses and small developers included, you know, especially when they get eaten up by a large publisher.
Right.
You know, if they don't perform, they're like, well, it wasn't meant to be like a AAA blockbuster. I don't think every game can do Call of Duty numbers or even, you know, others. If you look at the top 20 games from last year, I mean, those are all blockbuster franchises that have been around for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. Is creativity in danger? Is the major question here.
Yes.
Do you think that when they're
going to kill it by stealth?
But you don't have to actually touch anything.
Not going
to
kill it.
You're just going to think about killing it and then it's going to die somehow. But do you think that creativity is under serious jeopardy in this industry, especially since we're getting to the tail end of this generation where we have a Gears of War 3 coming out and Uncharted 3 and then a fourth portable, you know,
it's how you define. I mean, we're also at a place where never before has there been more outlets for small developers to get their games played by people. It's hard to get a game on the 360 that you know, is on store shelves and it costs however X million dollars. But there's Xbox Live Arcade and PSN, and there's iOS, and there's all these ways for indie developers who are uber creative and really thinking outside the box and doing some interesting things to generate followings and make some actual money. So, yes, it's a double-edged coin. You know, you have these big publishers who really need to throw money behind sure bets,
mm-hmm.
and that sucks because it makes them risk-averse. But you also have the other side of the spectrum, and I think that's the real problem that we've talked about on this show before. Garnett's brought up a bunch of times, which is the giant delta between the uber expensive AAA and the tiny, tiny indie game. Both are valuable experiences, but there's nothing that can sort of live in that space in between and survive.
Right. The most creative experiences that have happened in the last couple of years have come from the indie side of things.
Sure.
Especially with the emergence of the popularity behind iOS. Android is getting up there now. So definitely. Let's move on to something else.
Hold on a second before you leave that, because I wanted to bring in an element that and I know we're looking at time, but I want, like, the element that didn't come out here is that we're talking about these in frame of reference to Disney, and Disney mm-hmm. has had an interesting track record in the video game business, because they'll chart a course for a little bit, but then they change. And I think that as much as anything else, what happened here is they've made a huge change in direction, which they said. I mean, just listen to what they say. We made a change in direction. We're going social. And I think that they're looking at their overall brand of Disney and saying to themselves, well, why are we making Split Second? Because that's not what we do. What we do is we do Mickey and theme parks and rides and cartoons. Mm-hmm. And why are we not doing social games and family stuff that fits in with that? And yeah. why are we out here?
What they showed at E3.
You know, I mean,
Disney
they tried.
Very interesting in that regard.
You know, they tried Tron Evolution.
Yeah.
And, you know, Propaganda gave it a shot, but
it didn't sell and they got shut down.
Yeah, and ironically, I think that from what I saw of the Pirates of the Caribbean game they were working on, that would have been a far better game and more relative to Disney property and more relative to where, you know, like positioning it with the other things that they've done in the Pirates world, whereas the Tron game, it just missed.
That was a cash in. I think the Pirates thing, because I saw it a couple years ago when they first did the presentation behind closed doors, it looked really cool. And
yeah,
they seemed excited about it, which
they
was
did
so
really
different.
Excited about it.
I mean, the Tron game was like, yeah, we're making a Tron game because it's based on the movie. That Pirates game they seemed really excited about. Unfortunately, nothing came of it. It was canceled, and then that studio got shut down.
So I wouldn't read too much into this. I think that timing, obviously the racing game world got rocked because of poor publisher lack of coordination and everybody stepping on each other's toes.
So Sony has confirmed an online pass for Resistance 3. This was following rumors that sparked from a German Resistance 3 bundle that showed a little sticker on it saying that you needed a pass to activate the online mode. Sony has since confirmed this. Now, Sony isn't new to this. They've done this on the PSP before. They did it with Mod Nation Racers. You needed an online entitlement code, as it's called, in order to play the games online. But now Sony is saying, in a statement they released, that they're always evaluating new programs for online offerings, and this Resistance 3 will be the first time that they do it on the PlayStation 3, and it's going to be on the program is going to be built on a game-specific platform. But essentially what they're saying is that this is the route they're going to take now. Online passes in order to activate
how happy
certain modes.
Are publishers going to be that Sony is taking the heat first party on that for them?
Now, they haven't said what's coming up next, but you would assume the next big title for Sony is Uncharted 3, which is a first-party game that's developed by Naughty Dog
them. You got Twisted Metal before that. Twisted Metal in October. Would you not consider that a big title?
So, I mean, the reaction to it, people are mixed.
No.
I haven't played it, and I know, Jeff, you were saying that you didn't like it personally, but
I think it's a big release for them. Yeah.
Okay, so the discussion behind it being whether or not you feel, me and Jeff were talking about this earlier, how do you feel about these online passes? Do you feel that it's an inconvenience? Do you think that they're going after the online, used market effectively doing this route?
Yeah.
Do you prefer what EA is doing where they're actually giving you bonus content in order to purchase new games rather than turning on and off modes?
Yeah, it's the 2011 version of the code wheel or whatever it is.
Yeah, I've seen people talk about that. It is. It really is.
Numerous ways when we were growing up, or I was growing up, to deal with it in copyright. Copyright
turn to page 22 and paragraph 3, sentence 2, word 4.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, I remember that stuff.
Or I remember there's like a red, like the Transformers action figures used to come with, or G.I. Joe, you know, the red film thing.
Yep, and he's like, lay it over.
All that stuff.
Betrayal at Crown Door had some of that.
I mean, we have GameStop to thank for this. Not necessarily in a derogatory way. I mean, as a consumer, I like having the option to sell stuff back, certainly. That is the war that's happening. It's first time sales versus repeat sales. So it's an annoyance.
Yeah, I see the publisher's perspective in that they want to recoup their costs and have the most amount of profit possible. But being a gamer is really expensive. It's really, really not affordable for a lot of people out there.
Especially when people turn off your online services of older games and can't play them
anymore. Okay, so here's the discussion question I wanted to come out of this. Let's say you did actually think that this was a bad idea and you hated it. Now, if that was the way that you felt about it, are you more upset with the publishers charging for modes that should be in your games, or are you more upset with the retailers that sell used games are not adjusting their prices based on this happening within the games.
Definitely retailers need to adjust their prices. GameStop in particular has some titles that are used that are literally $5 less than the brand new price.
Yeah. The used market,
just absolutely absurd.
The whole used market is a mess, number one, in that regard, and that it takes advantage of customers in that you know, they're, like you said, they're only $5 less on new releases, and that to me is a mess of its own thing. The thing about the online play to me is this: it is not free to operate online services. Even if you're not running dedicated services or dedicated servers, you're still running player management. You're still making the connections, and you're still operating a service that's providing some game structure, right? And I'm sure that they know that on average, a customer who buys game X is going to spend so many number of hours playing their game, and they plan for that. But then what they don't plan for is when the used customer then buys it, is that then that clock resets, and now the used customer plays it for that long, and then the next customer who's used plays it for that long. But again, we get into another pricing problem in that $10 on a $50 game or on a $60 game is a pretty big chunk of change just to let me play the online piece. And maybe the way it should work is that, you know, if you buy the game, you get an unlimited. And thereafter, instead of them selling unlimited passes to online, why don't they sell, you know, inexpensive month access? Like, what if for like a game like Madden, if you bought it on the secondary market, then there would be like a $1.99 for a month of Madden Online or something like that. Right. I don't know what the answer is, but I wish they would start experimenting with it instead of just blanket it. That's $10.
Yeah. The only thing that worries me about this is because EA is a company that does shut down online services. I worry about people who are paying that $10 to play these games online and then thinking that
6 months from now,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It gets shut down. That's the only thing.
That's what I'm saying. After the game comes out, maybe it's an unlimited when you buy the game because you bought the game new. And then thereafter, if you need to buy it, look, we know you didn't buy the game new because you wouldn't be buying the service if you had bought the game new. So, hey, we're going to charge you to play online, but here's how we're going to set it up. You know, maybe it's almost like a microtransaction model.
Yeah.
In a sense. I don't know. Something like that would work. And then the other thing that's sad is, to kind of speak to Jeff's point, is that the promise of DLC hasn't really worked out all that great outside of like the big RPGs. The big RPGs, like, it's great. You know, we see these fantastic DLC packs, and there is no way if you bought Fallout 3 or now if you bought New Vegas, there's almost no way you're going to go trade that game in because you're excited about what's going to come next. Borderlands, my God, that was awesome. Like, they kept like a year and a half later, they're like, oh, here's another big chunk of content. So, of course, you didn't get rid of it. And I think that's a way cooler way. Plus, they sell that stuff. They're making money off you again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's the big show, folks. Wow, that was a big show. You tired? Worn out? Exhausted?
No, I just had a lot to say, and I didn't get to say it. That's all.
What else? What would you like
to
say, love?
No. I'll save it for the next time.
All right. Well, you'll be back soon. We still have finishing moves, which you're going to have to get to here in a second. So, you know what? We can cut to those right now.
Finishing moves.
Andrea, you wanted it. You got it. Microphone is yours.
All right. My finishing move comes from the new ESA 2011 Essential Facts Report that they do every year. And it's this: 42% of gamers are now female. 42%.
There's been sex changes.
Let's say, there's some very rich doctors now.
Yes, indeed. Sex changes. No, but the real finishing move is women age 18 or older represent a significantly greater portion of the game playing population than boys age 17 or younger. It's 37% to 13%.
What do they have any data as far as what constitutes playing a game?
Have you dated a woman before?
Yes, this is
I think
game,
we made the same
it's
joke.
Computer slightly. Or video games.
Okay.
Computer
so,
or video
so
games. And that includes
Minesweeper. I'm not belittling the gender at all. I'm just asking. You know, does
yeah, no,
playing
mobile,
solitaire
mobile
work?
Games, mobile games are included. Solitaire, I don't know.
Bejeweled
the,
and all
okay,
that stuff?
The types of that's not what you're looking for. That's types of online games most played, but that's just online.
Well, in an era where Apple just announced that they've sold 15 billion apps and 16.6% of them were games, that's a substantial chunk.
I think it's great. It's great that there are more women playing games.
Yeah, and that's just one of the many amazing stats here. It's 72% of American households play video games. Believe it or not, 29% of gamers
or over the age of 50, which I was shocked
What's
by.
What's the average game age now?
Is it 37.
Still 33? Oh, wow. It was 33 last year. Now it's 37.
You know 37. What? It's going to keep going up.
Yeah.
Surprise. Because the people who grew up with them are going to keep getting older.
Is that how the world works?
Inevitability.
Age.
And 55% of gamers play games on their phones or handheld device.
As inevitable as Jeff Kanata's finishing move.
So the lull, summer lull, has hit us, and you know, I was deciding what I'm going to play, and looking around my stack, and I noticed Child of Eden sitting there, and I thought to myself, "Boy, I have a lot of fun playing that game, and I like the concept of the Kinect. I've been a champion of the potential of the Kinect, and I found myself in the summer heat not wanting to do that at all, and thought, why?" Why is it? What is it about that the physicality that can be a turnoff for many of my friends, and was a turnoff for me in that moment? And I thought to myself, well, I would gladly walk outside right now and shoot some hoops. I'd go pick up a basketball by myself, and I would just shoot free throws. I would gladly do that right this second. So, what is the difference? And I'm trying to wrap my head around this, but I really feel like once the digital experience, the physical digital experience, can be like throwing a basketball into a hoop, can feel as one-to-one as far as causality, like what I'm doing directly applies to whether or not that ball goes in that hoop, I think that that's the hurdle. I think that's the hurdle for physicality in video games. And I'd love to hear what people think about that. It's not a fully fledged idea.
Intellectual discussion of the day, Ender.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's not a fully fledged idea, but it really there's an uncanny valley of, and it might be tactile feedback. It might be just limits of the technology as it now is constituted. But it's something there it's a repetitive, boring action to throw a ball into a hoop. But I find it vastly more interesting than doing the same thing with my Wiimote in Wii Sports.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Zav D'Amatos, finish it.
Well, today's little test for news didn't really work out because we only hit two of the things and we didn't really hit it the way that we wanted to. So let us know in the comments what you think or what you would like to hear from news on a podcast. I mean, hearing news on a podcast always seems strange to me, so let us know what you think we should be focusing on. But my real finishing moves thing is we talk a lot about entertainment here. We don't really talk about movies or television other than Jeff loving Transformers. But there is one thing that I want to talk about is a David Simon show. And all of his shows seem to not get a lot of attention until after they're gone. And that is a show that's just finished the second season on HBO called Tremé, which I've told you about.
You have told me about
Garnett.
This.
Amazing show. I'm in love with it. It takes place in New Orleans just after the hurricane. Fantastic. And I think people should really check it out. Season 2 just ended. Go back. Pick up season 1.
Nice. Also available on HBO on the go if you have a subscribing outlet that'll let you get that service, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's amazing.
I really like it. All right, here's my finisher. My finisher is you lose, Zynga. I put that shit down and couldn't be happier. And in that moment of happiness and elation at deciding I wasn't clicking any more goddamn train stops or any of that other junk, I realized that it has almost the exact same effect of letting go to that I had of letting go to World of Warcraft. Except the World of Warcraft, I was having a hell of a lot more fun when I was playing, at least. Man, like, I'm sorry. Like, Zynga, one thing that Civ World shows me is that you can make a game on Facebook. You just need to put a little more effort into it. And I'm glad to be putting that stuff down. If you are one of my Facebook friends that I've been playing those Zynga games with, I'll try and like send you some awards for another week or so, but I'm getting the hell off that thing. I'm done. Like, I haven't clicked on it in a week and I'm like, I don't miss it. Not only do I not miss it, I'm like, why was I even bothering with that again? Because it's not really a game. It's just clicking. Lots of clicking.
Mm-hmm.
Not really so fun.
How excited are you for Diablo, by the way?
Lots of clicking.
Hey,
I'm not comparing the two. Let's make that clear. My house is on fire right now because I said that.
Thanks as always to Andrea Renee for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You can catch up with her on her YouTube channel for Clever Games. That's youtube.com/clevergames with 2 V's. And also follow her on Twitter, Andrea Renee, and at Clever Games. Of course, Jeff Cannata, you can always follow on The Totally Rad Show,
where they do movies, TV, board games.
Special guests.
Special guests.
Have been on the Totally Rad Show recently. Garnet was on helping us review Shadows of the Damned.
Which was awesome.
Zav has been on in our board game episodes recently.
So
if you're not watching
fun.
Those board game episodes, give it a shot. We have some really fun ones. I really think people need to get on that train with me.
Or watch Jeff's Question of the Week this week, where you can see how he got into
That's
board
right.
games. Zav Damanos, you can always catch at Shaq News, and that's where I am. And also, from his upcoming album, second album, Club Tipsy, that was Del Rio in the featured music today. You can also follow Mr. Perkins at Mr. Perkins on Twitter. Del Rio is at Del Rio Music. And finally, last but not least, nobody gave my little brother any love. I mean, I know.
Like, what?
We asked for donations
nobody?
A lot. I mean, I appreciate it's tough, but like, if you got like $20 or something, and you could help him on his children's hospital ride,
dudes,
it's getting close.
Come on, people.
I don't want to get like I feel guilty because I don't want to get to where guilty. we're like you know soliciting for charitable donation all the time. But you know, if you can help him out.
It's tax deductible.
It is tax deductible. So I don't know. The link's in last week's show. But
you know what? We get that sexual innuendo jar. That sexual innuendo jar, that's going to pay for a lot of charitable donations in your part, my friend.
We could actually do that. That would be kind of cool.
That'd be fun.
That actually, and we could put it to Child's Play.
Let's
do this.
I'm going to need a lot of singles.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. That was an innuendo.
Yes. All right. There you go, folks. That's a great way to confirm the weekend. Until next week, we are Ghost.
The new me can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine.
Stop me, but they don't get close, so they do it from a distance.
Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.